I'd like to call this regular council meeting to order. Would you all please rise for the invocation?
We meet to serve our community and endeavor to be worthy custodians of all that has been entrusted to us. Let us be concerned only for what will promote good government. May we bring to our council chamber minds that think and hearts that feel, so that in our deliberations we may display imagination, wisdom, and courage, and the will to do our work for the good of all.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. The roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present, save and except Councillor McDermott, who is away on personal business this evening.
Thank you. I have a few announcements that I wanted to make, some of them just very briefly. The first of which is, yesterday morning at 7:06 a.m., I got a telephone call from someone from WNED, and after I awoke, we talked about a number of things, one of which had to do with CMS. And I understand that there was some suggestion that I had made reference to some big announcement that's going to happen. That didn't happen. That wasn't said. And I just want to make sure that councillors are aware of the fact that I'm not holding back from any of you, nor should the community be expecting some major announcement within the next couple of weeks. I didn't write the headline. I just gave the interview, and if you listen to the interview, you'll clear on that. So I just wanted to clear the dust with respect to that. I did, however, want to congratulate Mars Homes in for winning an award with respect to their development in Crystal Beach. They won the Hamilton Halton Home Builders Association Award Project of the Year for low-rise communities, and they had this was announced in a supplement to the Toronto Star. Great article about the project, big ad on the back of the insert into the Toronto Star, and a photograph of them receiving their award. So congratulations. This certainly is something that they should be proud of and we as a community should be proud of. I wanted to mention that next Tuesday, May the 31st, is the opening day at the Fort Erie Racetrack, and the races start at 4 o'clock. I understand it's going to be, in speaking to the general manager there, I understand it's going to be very good weather, promise, so we'll see what happens. Also, on, I think it's June the 3rd, or the 1st, sometime next week, latter part of next week, Garrison Little Theatre is hosting a touring group from England. This is an exchange that's been going on for more than a decade. Garrison Little Theatre performers will go to England, and the following year, touring members from that theatre group will come to Fort Erie. That's happening next week, and the English actors will be performing in one of the plays that will be shown. So if you have an opportunity, check that out. It's always a great performance when Garrison Little Theatre is involved. Next next week, June 2nd and 3rd, is the beginning of the 150th anniversary Fenian Raids History Conference. There'll be authors from all over North America, and they'll be speaking, providing seminars with respect to the matter. And just to give you a bit of a flavor for who will be here, William Jenkins, Peter Vronsky, who's written the book that we're all familiar with, the most recent book about the Battle of Ridgeway, David Wilson, Timothy Bowen, Brian McGovern, and Ian Keneally, who's quite famous, actually, around the world. They will all be part of the conference. Of course, June the 4th is the major event, and Russ Wilson is here. He'll be speaking to this shortly, so I won't steal any of his thunder. But that's the major military event that will be taking place on the 4th. And then on June the 11th and 12th, the Niagara Parks Commission at the Old Fort will be hosting the Fenian Raid reenactment. I also received today a letter from the Muscular Dystrophy Canada thanking the firefighters across Ontario for their participation in the fundraising drive. It's actually Canadian firefighters, and they particularly pointed out the Fort Erie firefighters for their generosity in supporting the works of the Muscular Dystrophy Canada And so I want to congratulate and thank the firefighters. Chief, perhaps you could pass that on to them. Two other things. Last Saturday was the 60th birthday of one of our council members. You all know I'm over 60, and we all know Councillor McDermott's over 60. That would mean you're next in line, Councillor Huberts. Congratulations for having made it through 60 years. Despite the fact many people didn't think that would happen, you're here, and I'm glad that you are. Happy birthday. And at that point, I did want to recognize that this evening we have among us a number of former council members. I'll start with the one who was on council the earliest, and that would be Russ Wilson, who was the trailblazer before I got to council, and we left the same time in 1994. But we also have Councillor Anne-Marie Noyes, your former councillor, as well as John Hill and Paul Collard. Good evening. And then finally, I wanted to ask Councillor Butler, the chair of the Party on the Patio Committee, if you could perhaps make a few comments and fill us in on the good news about that event.
Thank you, Your Worship. This was a collaborative effort. As you know, Councillor Nutt and I sit on the fundraising committee, and early last year I floated the idea of having an event with respect to a concert series and showcasing the talent that we have here in Fort Erie. As a direct result, Councillors Zanko and Passiero became co-chairs of the committee, and though there were many people who jumped in and out to assist us, the three of us really kind of cheerleaded the entire party with all of the individuals that came in to assist us. And what was really interesting is that this became more of a community builder than it did a fundraiser. And I'm really proud to say that the individuals from our town got involved to the point of participating in a flash mob with the mayor, our councillor, Ed Lustig, Chief Copeland, and our clerk, Laura Bubanko. So we had quite a bit of individuals that were supporting us that evening. And one of the highlights of the night was Councillor George McDermott singing with Pappy John's band, and Kansas City, I believe, was the name of the song that he sang. But I have to recognize as well some other individuals, and the fact that Les Trent, who is a Fort Erie boy and graduated from FAS on his own expense, as you know, he hosts Inside Edition, and flew in from New York City on Saturday early morning, met with Stephen with respect to the rundown of the evening's event, and the very next morning left to watch his daughter graduate in Ohio at 9:30 in the morning. So he was here until the wee hours of the morning, left in the wee hours of the morning, and did us a solid without asking for any compensation whatsoever, and really that was magnificent. If you're looking for pictures to see, you can see them all on Facebook, and just wanted to let you know that there was such a big buzz that we decided there that evening that we were going to make it a trilogy. So next year is going to be Bigger and Better, version 2.0, Party on the Patio, Fire and Ice. So it will leave you thirsting for more for sure. I'm going to turn it over to Councillor Zanko to have her speak about it as well, and then followed by Councillor Passiero.
Well, thank you. I don't know how much more I can add. You did a great job covering everything, but yeah, as Councillor Butler mentioned, it was just amazing to see the community come together. 100% of the proceeds are towards the Center of Arts. So I think that we all as a community were able to take this initiative, do some fundraising for a great cause, and I still can't get over the amount of community partners that came forward to volunteer their support, their materials, their talent, and essentially the amount of people that showed up for the evening. It was great to see so many from the community embracing a great cause and having a wonderful time as well.
Ed? Thank you, Councillor Zanko. A couple of key individuals I'd like to thank who really helped us put it on. And for those who didn't have the opportunity to be there, I hope you can join us next year. It truly was magnificent what we were able to convert the ice surface of the Leisureplex into that night. Was a real creative and imaginary type of space. And it doesn't happen by accident. I mentioned this that night, but some key individuals who helped us make it happen. The three of us had a vision, but we need other people to actually make it into what it was. Mike Webb of Niagara AV Systems, Joanne and Mick McDonald, the special needs program at Fort Erie Secondary School and the Fort Erie Horticultural Society did all of their centerpieces for donations. And we also had Stevensville Garden Gallery, Patarax, and Lawns and More contribute items for the decor. And in particular, Lawns and More, who created just absolutely outstanding, amazing spaces in and around our stage areas. It truly was a perfect way to just set the mood. And it was great because we had seen it take shape over the course of Wednesday, but to see the look on people's faces as they walked from the banquet hall into the arena, I don't think anybody imagined that we would be able to transform the space into the way that we did. The other people I'd like to mention, and it's kind of the unsung heroes, is anytime you do an event, your friends and family always get roped in, or we like to use a classier term called voluntold. And they put up with you not being at home for several nights. They do exactly whatever it is you need to ask of them. They never say no. They may argue with you later, but they never say no at the time. So a special thank you to our friends and family, in particular Rich Daniels, who went and got the coffee. We promised him a special mention. And all the volunteers that night, the three of us, you know, we're fortunate we get to take the podium, we get to extend our thank yous, but it's really volunteers behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, who are doing the things that we just simply can't be there all in one place to do at one time. So extremely excited for next year. Last two individuals I want to thank, and I can't stress the importance of these two gentlemen enough, but Sean Hutton and Derek Teal of our facilities team and their staff, both full-time as well as our summer team, absolutely phenomenal. We really did put them through the ringer. Nobody has ever done an event like this at the Leisureplex. They never said no, and there was a couple times where I was expecting them to say, Councilor Passero, no, we can't do that. But they never said no. Every single thing we asked of them, they found a way to make it happen. And to our communications coordinator, Janine Tesmer, thank you very much for your assistance as well. I can't even tell you how many times Janine must have walked back and forth from this building to the Leisureplex because Kim, Marine, and I changed our mind on a font, a color, or how to number the tables. But thank you for putting up with us. And I think the entire community got to show its stuff that night. So 360-some days away, we'll do it again even bigger and better. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Butler, Councillor Zanko, and Councillor Passero, and everyone who came out to help support the new theater. And I can't wait for next year's flash mob. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest, Councillor Nutt?
Yes, Your Worship. Thank you. I'd like to disclose a pecuniary interest on under number 9, consent agenda items 3, sub report A, receive quarter revision Nye Road, as I'm related to one of the property owners.
Okay, so then we'll remove that from consideration with the consent agenda package. Are there any others? Okay. Public notices with respect to two public meetings, one relative to a property rezoning at 225 Gilmore Road. That public meeting will be held on Monday, June the 13th, 2016 at 6 p.m. here in the Town Hall Council Chambers. And the report with respect to that will be available on Wednesday, June the 8th. Same information relative to a property rezoning public meeting relative to Zero Loomis Crescent. So that's property on Loomis Crescent, Monday, June the 13th, 2016 at 6 p.m. in the Town Hall Council Chambers. The report on that will be available June the 8th. I note that the Regional Councilor is not here, and that could be because that probably didn't show up on his schedule. But it takes us to presentations and delegations, and the first delegation is Mr. Gary Bellhouse and Mr. Larry Baggio, co-chairs of the Long Beach Ride. And I know they're here because I've got my football to prove it. Or is that from something else? That's from you. It says run, jump, play every day. Wouldn't that be the Long Beach Ride? Good evening.
Thank you. I'm not here to talk about a walk. I'm here to talk about a bike ride. Mayor, members of council, staff, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you for having me here today. Larry Boggio is co-chairman with myself, but he's in Tuscany right now, bike riding, eating, and drinking. Good wine.
I guess we know who won that draw.
That's right. Absolutely. I'm a member, along with Larry, of the Long Beach Ride Committee, and that's supported by the Niagara Sustainability Institute out of St. Catharines. And the two of our organizations here are in support of Big Brothers and Big Sisters South Niagara. Now, myself, you can see my my gray hair. I attended both Crystal Beach Public School, Ridgeway Public School. I've have or had family in Fort Erie, and I'm currently now a member of the Fort Erie Chamber of Commerce. So I'm a member of your community, putting together a bike ride to support Big Brothers and Sisters. Now, what I'd first like to do is just talk a little bit about Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and then I will explain what the bike ride is all about. I put on your tables a flyer that relates to the ride from Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Now, our mission, this is Big Brothers and Big Sisters. We commit to Canada's young people that we will be leaders in providing them with the highest quality volunteer-based mentoring program. We believe every child should have the opportunity to reach his or her full potential, both as individuals and citizens. We believe that by changing the course of young lives, we can in turn be changing the course of a community's future. I could say that again. That it could lead to a reduction in poverty, unemployment, or to safer schools and neighborhoods. We believe that opening a child's eyes to what is opens their mind to what could be. For 100 years, Big Brothers, Big Sisters has been making a positive difference in the lives of our nation's youth by developing and implementing a wide range of mentoring programs. Should have had more to drink before I came here.
You need some water?
No, I thank you very much for offering. Thank you. Thank you, Counselor. Witnessing the transformation of a child into a confident, concerned, and motivated young person is a remarkable thing. Ushering them into childhood, or from ushering them into adulthood, seeing them grow into successful, responsible members of their community and society at large is even more satisfying. Now, thank you very much, girls. That's much appreciated. We had our first ride last year, and it's out of the Long Beach Lions community. I don't know if anybody knows where DJs or Concessi's is on Long Beach, but that is where the ride went out last year, and it was the first. We raised over $12,000, and we had over 100 people participate in the ride. So I guess the first point that in terms of Big Brothers, now in the first 3 months, January, February, March of this year, Big Brothers has worked with over 500 young people. Example being from Fort Erie, 73 children here in Fort Erie were looked after by Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Welland, 286. Port Colborne, 124. Waynefleet, 25. Pelham, 15. So in the first 3 months of this year, Big Brothers has worked with over 500 students. Now, we're doing the ride to raise money to support Big Brothers and Sister in their mission. Now, talking about talking points, I think we could all agree that it's a good cause. And this year, we will have ride leaders. There's going to be three types of rides. There's going to be a 100K bike ride, two 50K bike rides, and a 25K bike ride. Now, if you're a Lance Armstrong wannabe, you can go with Larry Boggio on the 100K ride. If you want to be a leisurely ride along the lake, smell the roses, then you get to come with me. And if you want to go in that medium range and still have enough energy to have a great barbecue and some drinks afterwards, well, then you'll do the 250K. So we'll have, as I said, ride leaders. We'll have sweeps. That means people that follow up behind you. We'll have support vehicles. We have a halfway rest station. The halfway rest station is at the Canadian Tire in Dunnville. You'll get a great T-shirt. You'll get a full, program is $110 for two riders. So if you divide that by two, it's $55 each. You'll get a $100 tax receipt. So probably speaking, it'll cost you the gas money to drive to Long Beach to have the bike ride. And part of the Niagara Sustainability Institute is lessening the carbon footprint, and going for a bike ride on a bike on a Sunday afternoon, Father's Day, June the 19th, is better than driving your car like we all used to Sunday afternoon. So come for a bike ride. Now, we have sponsors this year. We have Lafarge is back again. We have Rankin. We have Boggio Pharmacy. We have Evolution Window Films. We have Niagara On-Site Storage. We have Water Superstore. We have Concessies. So we have a lot of sponsors that are coming forward. But what we really hope is for this year that we have 200 riders and we raise $25,000. We think that's not out of the question. So I'm hoping that I could send along to the clerk here a sponsorship package. And the example would be if you gave $250 to the ride, you could sponsor three members of council to come and do the ride. And I know I've been to other council chambers and other municipalities and towns are supporting this with riders. $500, that would let you sponsor five people from here for the ride. And again, that's Sunday, June the 19th, Father's Day, starts at 9 o'clock. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Mr. Bellhouse. That's usually what I get to ask. Any questions by members of council? Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop, and thank you very much for coming here today. I'm just looking at the pamphlet that you dropped off at our desk, and under the registration, is that the contact that we type in on the computer?
Yes, it says registration.
Yep.
bit.do, Long Beach Ride.
And, yep. And they'll get all the information, too, because what I'm thinking of, my attorney in Toronto, he's a bike rider, him and his girlfriend, and
awesome.
I'm thinking of sending that off to him, and I have a customer that we're working for right now where she's building a new home, and she's a rider, and I'd like to extend this off to them. So that's the contact information that I could give to them, and, and they can contact. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other counselors? Butler.
Thank you for your presentation. I'll be joining you for the leisurely ride.
Fantastic.
And I will sponsor three members of council for that ride as well. So if there's two members that want to join me, the invitation is open. Yay. Okay. So that means one more person. We're good.
I will send to the clerk, if I may, the sponsorship package, and then you can fill that out and send it in. That's greatly appreciated.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bellhouse. Good luck on the 19th.
Thank you. If I may finish with a quote, from John F. Kennedy. Nothing compares to the simple pleasure of a bike ride. John F. Kennedy, the late John F. Kennedy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you on Sunday, the 18th, or 19th. Thank you.
The next delegation is Rick Doan, president of the Point Abano Lighthouse Preservation Society, about the impending 100th anniversary of the lighthouse. Good evening, Mr. Doan.
Good evening. Just got a few passouts there. Start talking. Mayor and councillors, my name is Rick Doan, and I am president of the Point Abano Lighthouse Preservation, as you said. And about the name, is originally called that by the founding members, the late Janet Truckenbroat and Joanne Columbus. Somewhere along the line, it got changed to Point Abano Light Station Preservation Society. If you Google the word light station, it has nothing. We voted to change the name back to Lighthouse, which can easily be found while searching on the net. It took many months, lawyers, and government paperwork to change, but we are quite proud of the original name coming back. As well as our webpage, we now have a Facebook site called the Point Abano Lighthouse. So anybody that's on Facebook and wants to check that out, that would be great. Please visit it and see all the wonderful pictures that we have up. There's pictures that are old, new, and some pretty interesting ones. Next year, 2017, is the 100th anniversary of the building of the Point Abano Lighthouse. And we have recently had a token made for the occasion. And we have given you each one, along with the brochure of the tours this year with times and information. You'll also find a button in there that has nothing to do with the lighthouse that I produced for the Battle of Ridgeway. It's in a couple weeks, so wear it proud. The tokens that I'm talking about are now available to the general public and serve not only as a souvenir but for a fundraiser for our group. And on it, as you open them up, you'll see that it says Point Abano Lighthouse on one side, 1917 to 2017, and on the other side, I'll just read it quickly to you, the 100th anniversary of Point Abano Lighthouse, erected in 1917 after the sinking of Lightship 82 in 1913. Decommissioned in 1995, this national historic site is owned by the town of Fort Erie, Point Abano Lighthouse Preservation Society. We will also soon have a calendar for the 100th anniversary. We're very pleased that the town has restored the outside of the lighthouse, and we are hoping that we can do some interior work. As well, we have set aside some money and have been raising fundraising to have the interior walls stripped of the white paint and back to the four colors of the beautiful bricks. If you've been in, you'll see all these different beautiful bricks underneath. On our tours, we are happy at all the great comments we get on the exterior restoration. On the inside, we've had storyboards with pictures that not only tell the story of the lighthouse, but also enhance the formerly empty office of the late keeper, Lou Anderson, with enlarged pictures of how his office was, along with artifacts Lou had given us and that we restored, including a hand pump foghorn. I think some of you had seen that last year. Just a brief history. In the late 1800s, early 1900s, Buffalo, New York became a large hub for commercial ships bringing all the wheat across from the United States. As well, the steel industry boomed, bringing ships laden with iron ore, and then there was the problem of Point Abano sticking 3 miles out into the lake on the land and another 2 to 3 miles out under the water with its rocky, dangerous shoals, spelling disasters for many ships. In the beginning, they had acetylene gas buoys to mark the dangers. Then in 1912, the first U.S. Coast Guard lightship came on the scene, literally a floating lighthouse to warn the ships of the dangers. It was stationed halfway between Point Abano and Sturgeon Point on the U.S. side, or about 5 miles out. Unfortunately, a white hurricane storm came in November 1913 and pulled that ship down with all six on board. Only one body was ever found, and it was a year later in Buffalo Harbor. LV-82 was replaced with another lightship the following spring, but the Canadian government took note, and with 2 years of planning and designing and the expropriation of some of Alan Holloway's land, built the Point Abano Lighthouse. The local residents at the point weren't too pleased, but the government said they would build something that was very nice, and we know that they did. Materials were brought in by boat, and it was completed in 1917. It stands 98 feet tall and boasts a third-order Fresnel lens capable of directing a beam of light 20 miles out into the lake. It was paired with a diaphone foghorn. The light was turned by a clock mechanism that had to be wound every 6 hours at the top of the lighthouse until the 1940s when electricity came in. The hand-wound clockworks are still up in the tower, and we hope to bring it down at some point, restore it, and use it as one of the artifacts. This year, we have two new storyboards, including the black and white pictures taken in the 1960s of Paul Cassie, of Lou Anderson and the machinery inside, and the board dedicated to Lightship 82, which includes letters from the captain to his wife, letters from the U.S. government to his wife, and a copy of the postcard they found on board of the sunk ship that was still intact. PALPS, or Point Abbott Lighthouse Preservation Society, are all volunteers running the tours, and we hope that you'll be able to do some of the work that we will be able to do some of the work in the lighthouse to further enhance our guests' experience. In closing, we hope that you all get a chance to come out this summer and visit what one of our visiting lighthouse groups have called our lighthouse as the Taj Mahal of the Great Lakes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Doan, and thank you for the medallion and the pin presentation. And I note in the brochure that you provided us that the tours start on Saturday, June the 11th.
Correct.
And how does one book a ride on the tour?
You phone the town of Fort Erie here and read on that little brochure that I've given you out there, and they will send you to the department where you can book. You can randomly come out there on that particular date and hope that there's still space, and a lot of times there is, that you could buy a ticket right there.
Okay. So otherwise, call ahead 871-1600, extension 2431.
Yes.
Thank you. Do any members of council have any questions of Mr. Doan? And I know that the interior work that you've mentioned is has been an issue for the last couple of years. So it's a topic of discussion between the CAO and the mayor, not infrequently. We'll see what we can do. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank
Doan.
You.
The next delegation is Dennis Hernandez Galeano. You have two in a row, but we'll start with the Fort Erie Active Transportation Committee. Good evening.
How are you?
Good. Painful. Thanks. See, I am listening. Is it on now?
There you go. Again, good evening, Mayor Redkop, Council. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this evening to share with you FEET's recent activities, our short and long-term goals as expressed in our recent updated strat plan, and to see Council's consideration on a topic that would represent real accomplishment towards gaining focus for the coming years and the changing mindset that are embracing active transportation for its many benefits. Our mission statement and slogan embodies that growing mindset. We are a council-appointed advisory committee made up of volunteers who share an interest in evaluating the significance of active transportation in our community. The town's official plan provides that an active transportation committee exists for the purpose of advising council and to advocate for the purpose and infrastructure in bringing desirable conditions to the residents and visitors of our town. The committee is made up of 9 members and staff liaison and meets each month. And we have a few of our members as well sitting in. I just want to recognize them. Yeah, I'm a little behind here, sorry. The strat plan was created so FEET can remain guided in the efforts. The goals and objectives fall under 5 headings: community outreach, education, planned capital improvement and developments, trails and destinations, and accessibility. Community outreach has generally been where FEET has seeing the shorter terms accomplishments being achieved, most notably the coordination of the bike rack projects for our downtown BIAs. Last year's Ridgeway series turned out very well, and the Bridgeburg series are close to being completed. The community hopes to repeat the efforts in Crystal Beach. A partnership between the high schools and the BIAs and the town is a win-win-win situation. With the help of others through the kind contributions of time and materials, fleece donation of the aluminum this year. The students gain valuable hands-on design and trade experience, while the BIAs get additional racks of less cost. One of the more recent FEED initiatives is trying to establish and certify core areas as bike-friendly communities. Again, this relies on partnerships, and FEED are currently outspeaking the businesses about the program and benefits. FEET will continue to promote and engage the community with initiatives such as these, and sincerely hope that they are embraced. FEET have also adopted a section of the Friendship Trail between Crescent and Buffalo Road. FEET schedules and participates in cleanup walks and would encourage other organizations to also consider doing the same. If any group wishes to contact FEET, we can direct you to the appropriate staff resource to help in the adoption process. Education is not just about enlightening the masses of the environmental and health benefits of AT. It's also about understanding the needs and choices people face each and every day. It's about shaking stigma and pushing the agenda to normalize AT. FEET believes it is better to be ahead of the curve in moving towards an AT-friendly community than to be dragged in from behind. The dialogue needs to continue. Members seek opportunities to engage with local and regional government and groups to share and hear about the challenges others have or still face in trying to bring tangible results through policy developments and implementation. Planned capital improvements and developments represent the biggest challenge to improving conditions that foster increased AT. These are generally seen as the long-term wins that FEET hopes to see come to fruition. Am I on the wrong page? FEET understands that major projects takes years of planning and preparation, and that naturally cost efficiency is of keen interest and concern to the municipalities. FEET believes that the planning such capital works or capital replacements may wish to give serious consideration to the provision of AT infrastructure where it will be best served for the community. An active transportation master plan would serve the municipality well in ensuring that networks are identified and appropriately planned for. Complete networks don't just spring up overnight. We get that. But even if the networks established incrementally over a decade of or more, then the point it is a network is planned for and on its way to completion, and there is no better way than having an AT master plan to build from, lean on when capital projects and new developments is first contemplated. Trails and destinations can play an important role in facilitating tourism and destination travel. Fort Erie has many points of interest that are easily accessible for the Friendship Festival from the Friendship Trail. Fort Erie has including downtown district, the fort, waterfront, and beaches, and even access to the Peace Bridge. Connecting Stevensville along with the old TP line into Bridgeburg would be considered a goal the town may wish to consider in the future. A accessibility is the context of accessibility is in relations to making it accessible to everyone, regardless of ability. Having suitable infrastructure and identifiable networks can influence decisions we make about modes of transportation we can use to get around. Sidewalks, trails, systems, cycle lanes all have a place in our public realm, and while each are not always practical everywhere, an active transportation master plan can help identify the gaps to allow for the planned completion of networks to afford and present active transportation as a viable option to pedestrians' movements in a healthy and safer manner. More and more people are taking part in active transportation for their daily movements, whether out of choice or need. Accommodating active transportation in our municipality warrants a closer look to where we stand as a community to provide for everyone and supports healthy choices, particularly for our urban areas. Feet sees an opportunity that it would like council's consideration on in future budget deliberations. Regional and local governments throughout Ontario are strengthening their commitments to active transportation throughout master plans. The region of Niagara are in the midst of their transportation master plan that is placing strong emphasis on AT and the complete streets mantra. Being in a position to build off the regional plan at the local level will ensure integration for local, intermunicipal, and or regional AT network planning. FEET would like council to consider undertaking an active transportation master plan and identify the study in the 2017 budget deliberation. As an example, the town of Pelham is presently in the middle of an active transportation master plan for the local municipalities. A municipality with a little over half of the population of Fort Erie, a population density 30% less than Fort Erie, the budget for the plan was set at $30,000. We would like to thank Council for the opportunity to present this evening and to share in hearing about our recent activities, initiatives, and long-term objectives. A copy of FEET Strat Plan is available on our town webpage. FEET looks forward to continuing on this mandate, and hopefully we do get there. We've had, like I mentioned before, we've made some good strides in the past few years, and of course, it's been with council's help. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hernandez-Galeano. Are there any members of council that have any questions? I presume that with the assistance of your staff resources, Mr. Miller, who will be with us after June the 30th, but Mr. Wilson up until then as well, you'll be putting together a budget for this master plan?
Thank you, through Mr. Mayor. We still have some research to do. The philosophy behind it is it has many assets. There are tangible on the ground stuff versus the long-term health benefits and costs and budgets, economic tourism. And we want to make sure that we've got a good handle on all that, but certainly we have some more research to do in comparing other municipalities, what they've done, how they've done it, you know, what's worked, what hasn't. So we would like to do that work, but we would also like council to make council aware that this is an item that we would like again.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you. Now, without leaving the podium, Hernandez-Galeano, you are now up for Accessibility Advisory Committee.
Yes.
Presentation?
Yes. Yeah. This one's shorter.
It's a really short one.
Yes.
We've learned.
Well, that's okay. It's all very informative, and it's helpful not only for council, but also for the community.
Indeed. Again, thank you for having me here. Here I'm. We're here to talk on National Access Awareness Week, and which is coming up in a couple weeks. Since 2005, Council has affirmed its commitment to creating an accessible town of Fort Erie by recognizing National Access Awareness Week. National Access Awareness Week was established in 1988 in response to a request from Rick Hansen following his Man in Motion World Tour. It aims to bring together in a spirit of partnership persons with disability, organizations who serve them, businesses, labor, and governments to affect meaningful changes in the daily lives of our persons with disabilities. Council is being asked to proclaim the week of May 29th to June 4th, 2016 is National Access Awareness Week. As you can see up on the screen, this is our new logo. It was a collaboration between myself and what's Tammy's last name? Tammy Clark. We revamped our logo, and with the spirit of the old colors of Fort Erie, we went with the purple and yellow, and also kind of give it a little bit of, I guess, respect to FESS as well, since it is going to be a school that will be merging with the new school. So I figured, you know, why not keep those old colors and kind of give it a throwback type of feeling to it. So, this is what we came up with. Thanks in part to Council and Accessibility Directorates of Ontario, the Fort Erie AAC is hosting an event on Thursday, June 2nd, 2016 at the Fort Erie Leisureplex, 10 years after its successful first event. The original event was attended by Accessibility Committee members from throughout the region, and it is time we have expanded it to include local businesses and BIA members as a special screening of the documentary film Talent Untapped, targets employment for persons with disability. We are also fortunate to have sponsorship for the event from Joint Accessibility Advisory Committee, Grimsby, Lincoln, Narragansett-Lake, Pelham, Thorold, West Lincoln, and from the St. Catharines Accessibility Advisory Committee. The event will also include performance by the Basement Rockers, made up of members from TAS Niagara. Personal support workers and sign language interpreters will be available. The Town of Fort Erie AAC continues to work with businesses and organizations throughout our community to remove barriers in services and facilities. We hope that you will find some way during National Access Awareness Week to acknowledge how far our community has come in 10 years. Thank you again for your past support and continued support to the AAC.
Thank you, Mr. Hernando Galeano. And thank you as well to your committee, as well as the members of the Active Transportation Committee. Any members of council have any questions? I know that that's a big event on June the 2nd, and I expect to be there in the morning. So I know that there's a lot of work that's been put into that, and you should be very proud, you and your committee, including your staff resource. Sitting beside you, Bev Bradnam. So good luck on the 2nd.
Thank you, and hope to see you there. It's shaping up to be a pretty good one. So thank you again.
Good, thank you. Next delegation is Kathy Denehauer on behalf of the Wall of Fame Committee. Ah, yes, Larry Graber. Sorry about that. I saw the red hair of Mrs. Denehauer, and you know what red hair does to me.
You don't know what I have put up with for 11 years.
I can imagine.
But I'm allowing him.
Good evening.
And before I do begin, I would like to congratulate those people. Citizen who attended that.
You know, Kathy, most people aren't aware of it, but you were beside me or near me when the flash mob started, and I know that you wanted to join in. but you were discouraged by your friend. Next year, join in.
Careful, Your Worship. Good evening, Your Worship, counselors, staff. It certainly is a privilege for me to bring you information this evening regarding former and present citizens of our town of Fort Erie. As chair of the Wall of Fame Nomination Selection Committee, since the resurrection of the wall 11 years ago, we have selected over 50 individuals. Our committee has partnered with the Kinsman Club of Fort Erie for these years. It has been a very successful partnership that culminates in a great evening and induction ceremony once a year. As Henry Ford once said, coming together is the key. Keeping together is process. Working together is diversified sports. And needless to say, diversified people are inducted each year. These are remarkable individuals, disciplined in their sport and exceptional citizens. By the way, we have a waiting list. Of course, the Wall of Fame would not exist if we did not have our nominators. We are grateful to these people who care enough to do the necessary research on the individual and the team, and to spend the necessary time sent these individuals to our committee for selection. Many hours and discussions are held within the committee during this process. Some of our committee members were going to attempt to, I'm not sure if they are. I extend my thanks to them for us. We have three ladies who are not committee members. Ingrid Cawley in Infrastructures at the Municipal Center, Linda in the Law Office of Michael George, and the Times reporter Sarah Ferguson. Thank those ladies. If you have not yet joined us for the dinner and induction ceremony, please, council members and Fort Erie. And now here's Larry.
Thanks, Kathy. Kinsman Club of Fort Erie got involved with the Sports Wall of Fame back in 2006 when we inducted the first of many new members. On June 24th, 2016, we will be inducting another five new members, including one team, of course, members who excelled in different fields such as hockey, horse racing, karate, pole vaulting, and basketball. These members will bring to 79 the number of individuals and or teams that have been inducted in the Fort Erie Sports Wall of Fame since its inception. Every year, Kathy and her group, the selection committee members, are apprised of new names that are worthy of being recognized for their achievements in any number of sports. Take this year as an example. For the first time, a karate sensei and a pole vaulter are being inducted. We don't think the selection committee will run out of deserving names anytime soon.
Kinsmen Club of Fort Erie is again proud to host the annual induction ceremony and dinner at the Fort Erie Leisureplex Banquet Hall on June 24th, commencing at 6 p.m. with a cash bar and an opportunity to meet the inductees, to view memorabilia from this year's inductees, and to peruse the silent auction items. That will be followed by dinner at 7 p.m. and then the induction ceremony following thereafter. The cost of a ticket to this great evening has remained unchanged at $50 since we first hosted this event in 2006. Over the years, we have and continue to absorb fluctuations in the prices of the meals and other related event costs, and will continue to do so as long as we can. Tickets to this year's induction ceremonies and dinner can be purchased by contacting Linda, who works at Mike George's law office, at phone number 905-871-8705, or by email at mgeorge@bellnet.ca. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Graber. Any members of council have any questions? Councilor Becerra.
Thank you, Mayor Redekamp. Thank you, Ms. Denehauer and Mr. Graber. I've had the privilege to attend a couple times in the past. Who do you get to help put together the different displays? Because they are just phenomenal, of the memorabilia and all the different items that these individuals have collected over the years. It truly is amazing, the stuff that they come up with.
It is. And we're very good to have Ruby Smith and the members of Heritage Arts put the displays together.
Thank you for that information.
Great. So that's June the 24th, Saturday.
Friday night.
Good thing you mentioned that. And $50, contact Linda at 871-8705. Right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
That takes us then to Russ Wilson, who has a couple of exciting events to mention to the council. Good evening.
Evening, Your Worship.
Now I can bring out the football.
No, not this one. Next one.
Next.
Unless you're going to throw it at the Battle of Ridgeway.
That may draw fire of a disproportionate amount.
Certainly may. Thank you, Your Worship, members of council, staff, members of the audience. I'm here tonight to just give everyone an update on the 150th anniversary that's going to be happening way too soon. It's closing in. I know that the organizers of the big event at the Leisureplex know that the pressure starts to mount the closer we get to the event. But I thought I'd take the opportunity to bring everybody up to speed on where we're going, and maybe some of the listening public at home hasn't heard exactly what's happening. So, as we all know, the Battle of Ridgeway, 150th anniversary, the battle took place in 1866. I guess the two significant points about the battle that make it extremely historic is that it was the battle that formed the Dominion of Canada in 1867. The other thing that makes this very relevant is it's the site where the first Canadian soldier died in defense of our country. So it's a very, very historic, it's a very meaningful event for the military, the Queen's Own Rifles and the Royal Hamilton Light Infantry. To that end, both regiments are participating in this to the highest level possible, to the extent where they have members who were supposed to be going over to Kandahar in Afghanistan and are expressing a very much sorriness, I guess you could say, for the fact that they won't be at this event. They've got individuals coming in from all over Ontario and Canada to attend the event. So I just want to give you a little bit of an overview on what's going to happen on the day. So on June 4th, the first item will be a parade that's going to step off from the West End Arena. That parade will step off at 12 o'clock. When we were at the last planning meeting at the Armory in Hamilton, we asked just how long that parade was going to be. The response that we got was it's going to be anywhere from 4 to 5 football fields long. So all soldiers, and a military band. So that's pretty impressive. So it's going to step off the West End Arena probably around noon. It will march north on Ridge Road until it gets to the Village Square in Ridgeway. That is, in fact, where the disembarking point was for the original troops when they came in back in 1866. There's going to be a ceremonial event there called Freedom of the City. It's traditional, and what happens at that point is before a force enters into a city, they need to be invited into the city by the police chief and His Worship the Mayor. So the column will stop, and they'll stop on the south end of the CIBC Bank, and the column will still go all the way back past probably the Flying Squirrel, past the gas station that's back there. So they'll all turn left. His Worship the Mayor and the police chief will meet the two commanding officers at the Village Square, and the mayor will offer them freedom of the city. After that's been done, that is when both military regiments are allowed to display colors and fix bayonets, because now they're allowed to enter into the city. So from that point, they will continue to march north on Ridge Road. There's going to be a volley at Ridge and Dominion, Ridge and Nye, and Ridge and Number 3. There'll be a volley because in the times when these troops were marching, they had skirmishers in front of them, and the purpose of the skirmisher was to make sure that they cleared the field ahead of any advanced scouts or parties from the enemy. So that's going to be fairly interesting as well. So once that last skirmish is done, they'll make the turn at Number 3 Highway, and they'll march up to the Cairn at the Battle of Ridgeway. There'll be a ceremony that'll start probably at 1 o'clock. It'll be a full-blown military ceremony with wreath laying by the dignitaries. His Worship the Mayor will be laying a wreath as well. They'll be dedicating a plaque to the Ridgeway 9, which were the 9 individuals that died at the battle in 1866. After the formal military ceremony is over, there will be a municipal ceremony as well to dedicate the ironwood tree that is at the furthest part in the rear of the park. That ironwood tree was actually there during the original battle, and there's going to be a plaque unveiling to dedicate that ironwood tree. So for the people listening at home, and probably for the edification of members of council and staff, I think I had mentioned around Town Hall that around 1 to 110, there's going to be a parachute jump by one of the Queen's Own Rifles paratroopers. The original event was the trooper was going to jump out at 8,000 feet with a flag that was 22 feet by 32 feet. It's now been changed, and the trooper is going to jump out of the aircraft at 10,000 feet with a 1,000 square foot Canadian flag. Very impressive, to say the least. And this guy's hoping it won't be windy, obviously. So after the event at the Cairn at the Battle of Ridgeway is over, the military will march off, and they'll proceed back to the West End Arena, where the military are putting on a community event for the kids and for all members of the community to come out. There's going to be all kinds of things for the kids to do. There's going to be, dress up in a parachute, dress up in a military outfit, lift a military weapon. There's going to be skirmishes in the back, all kinds of military equipment. The Lions Club of Ridgeway will be putting on a barbecue, and there will be a beer garden at the back as well. There are military displays from both the Queen's Own Rifles and the Royal Hamilton Light Infantry Museums. A couple of those pieces have never left the museum, and they're coming to this event. You'll also remember that there's a sword that was found in a tree that will be there. An actual sword that was used in the battle. Someone hit it in the V of a tree. It's now been found, and it'll be on display back at the West End Arena. So just a couple of items that, some housekeeping items for the people listening at home and yourself. So Number 3 Highway is going to be closed from Sodom Road to Ridgemount Road from 9 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon. That gives you some indication of how much weight this event must carry to get that road closed for that long. There's going to be a number of other road closures. There will be signage up all over. It should be starting within the next 2 to 3 days. Every household that's affected by the closure has received notification. Every household has received one of these that I'm sure you all received as well. And we're marketing it as best as we can. The other thing that should be pointed out is there is no parking, and I emphasize that again. There is no parking at the event. Parking will be at the West End Arena, and all patrons will be bused up to the event at the Battlefield Park in Ridgeway. The busing will probably start between 10 and 10:15, and the last bus will move out at about 12:15. So we're hoping to have a large crowd out at the Battlefield Park, because let's remember, this is really not about us. It's about honoring our military, the people that made this all possible. So I encourage you as members of council, staff, those of you listening at home, please spread the word. Let's have a good showing for when the military visit Fort Erie. Other than that, I'll answer any questions, but that should give you a pretty full update on where we are.
That's excellent, Mr. Wilson. And you and Jane Davies and the people that you've been working with are to be commended for putting this together. This is unbelievable, and it's going to be a great day in the history of Fort Erie. So we very much appreciate that. And I noticed as well in the material that's been circulated throughout the town and has now been in every mailbox, as far as I know, that there's a reference to poppies being sold by the two Legion branches, 71 and 230, to commemorate this particular event. So that's something that's being coordinated as well through this whole initiative.
Yes, Your Worship, that's right. There, poppy sales, there has been a change in the rules surrounding poppies, and poppy sales at these types of memorial events are now allowed. So yes, both legions will have poppies, and as I've been corrected, not for sale, but poppies for donations.
Yes, sorry.
And again, tradition is that usually the poppies that are received by the general public through donation are then placed at the cairn after the event is over. So hopefully we'll see thousands of them there. That would be great.
Before I go to members of council, I just wanted to say that if the military says that the parade's going to start at 12, it isn't going to be probably around 12. It'll be at 12.
Yeah, unlike those of us that were politicians and are, these guys are pretty punctual. They're on the number. If they say 12, it's 12.
Well, any members of council have any questions of Mr. Wilson? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor DeCamp. Mr. Wilson, could you speak briefly to the significance of having the parachutist drop in and what that means for that space going forward?
Through you, Your Worship, to Councilor Passero. Yes, what that means going forward for the community is that once that parachuter drops and lands, and the drop zone, for those of you that are not familiar, is going to be between Battlefield Park and the mausoleum to the east. There's a vacant piece of property in there. So what happens is once that military, and that zone has been registered now as a drop zone, that'll now be entered into every military operational handbook as a designated military drop zone. So, yeah, that's pretty significant. I believe, and I'm hoping I'm getting this right, but I understand that the drop zone is going to be called the Ridgeway 9 Memorial Drop Zone. So just another thing. And we have given you all a little bit of swag. You all got a paper bag and inside that paper bag are our T-shirts. So please wear those T-shirts as often as you can so we can get the word out. And we would appreciate anything that the council can do. And again, just to echo Councilor Passero's comments, town staff has been fantastic. We've had cooperation right from the finance department, infrastructure services. They've all been great, and we very much appreciate their assistance. We certainly couldn't have done it without them, or won't be able to do it without them, let's put it that way.
Great. Any other members of council? Councilor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redicott. Mr. Wilson, just not a question, but more of an inquiry. I'm just wondering, is there going to be any live webcams located during in any strategic locations during the parade? And the reason I'm asking is just for some of the out of town people that were residents of Fort Erie but now live out of town, and I'm just wondering if there'll be any access, internet access to it.
Through you, Your Worship, to Councilor Luberts, good question. Yes, the entire event including the parade, will be live streamed on YouTube through the town's account. So you will get a live streaming. We've got a drone that's going to be taking pictures. We've got still pictures. There's going to be filming. So yes, if you're not able to make the event, or if you decide you want to watch the parade, you can watch the ceremony being streamed after that, and then you can make your attendance back at the West End Arena to the military event.
Anything further, Councilor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much. Being live streamed, I'm not that computer literate yet. How does one get on live stream for that? Is there a code that they're going to have to put in, or is there something that I can send to relatives?
I believe it'll be posted on the town's website, and there will be a link. So it'll say live video streaming, 150th and Battle of Ridgeway.
Okay, so I just need to direct them to the town's website. And then I'll let them know where to find it. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other members of council? Councilor Passero.
Yeah, my apologies for not mentioning this. If somebody wanted to volunteer, because I know you can never have enough volunteers, whom should they contact us?
Through you, Your Worship, to Councilor Passero. You can certainly contact me, Al Stouffer, Jane Davies, or Jude Scott, and I would like to thank those other individuals, because they've put as much time, if not more, into this than I have. So, any one of those four individuals, contact, and we will definitely use you.
So the telephone number for the town to contact you or Al Stouffer is 871-1600.
Right, extension 2540. That's my extension, or 2543 for Al.
And for the museum?
Yeah.
894...
Okay, come on. Anybody? We're not sure. So... 905-894-5322.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wilson, you now have some comments with respect to the Healthy Kids Community Challenge kickoff.
Thank you, Your Worship. Thank you, Councilor Lubberts. I'm IT challenged as well. So, Your Worship, members of council staff and members of the audience, I'm here tonight to provide council with information on a new program to be implemented in Fort Erie as part of the Regional Healthy Kids Community Challenge Initiative. The Healthy Kids Community Challenge is an initiative sponsored by the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care aimed at preventing childhood obesity. With the leadership of Regional Public Health and the commitment of all 12 mayors who signed on as champions, the vision was created in 2014 to make our region a model for the Healthy Kids Community Challenge program in Ontario. Their efforts, in concert with that of the Regional Healthy Kids Steering Committee, of which I am chairman, resulted in a successful application to the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care, which included a three-year commitment of $1.125 million. The Healthy Kids Community Challenge is based on the EPOD model, which is a unique strategy that brings together all sectors of the community, education, government, community partners, private sector, and families. In Niagara, 1 in 3 children and youth are overweight and obese, and only 20% of youth are meeting the minimum physical activity guidelines of 60 minutes per day. Starting in 2015, the Healthy Kids Community Challenge Committee began to address this crisis with the launch of our Theme 1 program, Run, Jump, Play Every Day. This Theme 1 program is designed to promote daily physical activity for our children and youth with a focus on established priority neighborhoods within all 12 municipalities making up the Niagara region. All 12 municipalities have designed plans for implementation, and with committed staff resources and grant dollars, are ready to launch this unique and aggressive program to begin the ongoing process of addressing childhood obesity. Let me now focus on Fort Erie and describe our plan to address Theme 1, Run, Jump, Play Every Day. As mentioned, all municipalities received grant dollars to assist in providing programming. Fort Erie's grant was $20,949. Fort Erie has entered into a very unique partnership with the town of Niagara-on-the-Lake, the Boys and Girls Club of Niagara, United Way, and Canadian Tire. To purchase and outfit a van with recreational equipment that will take activities to our priority neighborhoods. In other words, we are bringing the recreation activities to the kids, thereby eliminating the transportation barrier. A mobile kids zone. How will this work? Step one, Fort Erie and Niagara-on-the-Lake have combined grant monies to purchase a new van for the Boys and Girls Club of Niagara. Step two, the Boys and Girls Club will own and operate the van and provide 4 10-week recreational program blocks in our priority areas of our communities, focusing on seasonal activities. The programming will include 2 days of activities per week in Fort Erie and 1 day of activities in Niagara-on-the-Lake. The anticipated start date for the program will be July of this year. Step three, the Healthy Kids Committee and both communities will market these initiatives, dates and times, along with ongoing evaluation of the program to ensure sustainability and participation. Our program launch will take place with a mayor's photo op and press release on June 13th at 2 p.m. at the Boys and Girls Club in Niagara Falls on McLeod Road. As you can see, staff and community partners have taken this challenge to heart, and for that they should be congratulated. On behalf of the Healthy Kids Community Challenge Committee, I would like to thank you for your continuing support of this initiative. For more information on Regional Healthy Kids Community Challenge, you can follow it on Twitter at Niagara Kids, on Facebook at Healthy Kids Niagara, or visit the website at healthykidsniagara.ca. The Town of Fort Erie's program will be posted on our social media sites shortly. You will find in front of you a little more swag. Some of you got water bottles. The mayor didn't get one. He got a football because you got a water bottle at the region. Councillor Passero got a hat. I wonder why we gave him a hat and not a water bottle. The picture that you see up on the screen is the mock-up of the Healthy Kids van. And you can see that on all four sides, the town's logo is placed along with that of the Town of Niagara-on-the-Lake and Healthy Kids. So with that, Your Worship, thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson, and thank you very much for spearheading this on behalf of the Town of Fort Erie and being involved with all of the communities in Niagara. This is a great program, and it's one that I know you're very proud of, and we're proud of it as well. Thank you. Do any members of Council have any questions of Mr. Wilson with respect to the Healthy Kids Initiative? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor DeCamp. Mr. Wilson, the van, the image in the bottom left, is that Councillor Butler on her bicycle?
Actually, it is. I was hoping you didn't recognize it, and I wanted to be silent, but now that you've brought it up.
Any serious questions? Thanks very much, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Thank you, members of council.
The last two delegations relate to a matter that was brought to council's attention by the Community Gaming and Development Corporation. A request by board to have one of its members removed that can only be done by council. So these delegations are going to address that issue. I must say that this is not a trial. This is an opportunity for council to hear what the opposite sides of the issue have to advise us before we make a decision, so that we can make a decision with some knowledge of what we're being asked to do. So I understand that Larry Graber is going to be speaking on behalf of the the majority of the Gaming Corporation Board of Directors. Good evening, Mr. Graber, and I should advise you and Anne-Marie Noyes, former counselor, who will be addressing us, that you're bound by the same rules with respect to delegations, that is 10 minutes.
Mayor Redekop, members of Municipal Council, town staff, ladies and gentlemen, I have been asked to speak on behalf of the Community Gaming and Development Corporation of which several of the executive members and other members of the board of directors are sitting at the back. I've been asked to offer background into the recommendations that Municipal Council remove board member Anne-Marie Noyes from the Community Gaming and Development Corporation as a result of her conduct and violation of generally accepted directors' code of ethics. We would also bring to Council's direction that there were two votes opposed to the motion, namely Anne-Marie Noyes and John Hill. We would like to make clear that we are not here to debate or defend the actions of the board for any of the decisions reached by the board on any specific issues, any of the board minutes, or legalities of the CGDC bylaws. Since her appointment, there have been differences of opinions on almost every issue between Ms. Noyes and most other board members. However, we are not here to defend the democratic process in reaching those decisions, but rather the personal conduct of Ms. Noyes, both during meetings and outside meetings, when she does not agree with the board's decisions. Our board is comprised of appointed community members who are committed to effective decision-making, and once a decision has been made, speaking with one voice. The environment that should be maintained in the boardroom should not limit free and open discussion. Board members should at all times act with decorum and be respectful of other board members. Board members should work with one another in the spirit of respect, openness, courtesy, and cooperation. This has not been the case with Ms. Noyes. When we were appointed, we were expected to act in a civil manner. Board members should conduct ourselves in a professional and businesslike manner at meetings. No board member should engage in conduct that would discredit or compromise the integrity of the board as a whole, nor individuals, including staff. Board members should not make erroneous, defamatory, or vexatious statements about board members or staff. Board must not compromise the integrity or damage the reputation of either the corporation, board members, or staff. Board members should not advance allegations of misconduct that are vexatious or vindictive in nature against another board member or staff. Over the past few months, one particular board member has resorted to accusing the opposing view board members of being unduly influenced by staff, which is an attack on the personal integrity of board members who don't happen to agree with her point of view. We can cite many more examples, but suffice to say this is occurring at every meeting. As well, we understand that we are obliged to abide by the decisions of the majority of the board, even though individually we may disagree. Board members should accept that authority rests with the board and that a board member has no individual authority other than that delegated by the board. And board members should refrain from speaking for the organization unless authorized to do so by the board. In light of all this, the spirit of cooperation, professionalism, and teamwork has been undermined at the Community Gaming Development Corporation. Therefore, we are here to ask the director in question be removed by a resolution of council per sections 3.4, item 7, and 3.5 of bylaw number 1 of the Community Gaming and Development Corporation of Fort Erie. That ends our report. The brief copies have been provided as well with a confidential correspondence from one of our directors to give you more background information.
Thank you, Mr. Graber.
Did you have anything? I can return for questions later if you wish.
No, you can. We'll do questions right now. You make reference to a generally accepted director's code of ethics. Is there an actual written document, or is that simply exemplified by some of the examples that you gave at the bottom of the first page of your?
There is no set rules of conduct, but generally accepted principles that are in place.
examples of good behavior, professional conduct.
Good behavior, yes.
All right. And the vote that took place on April the 21st, what was the number? You said you mentioned that there were two that voted against.
7-2, I believe. I'd have to look at the minutes, but I'm sure it was 7-2.
Thank you. Do any other members of council have any questions? Councilor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Mr. Graber, thank you very much for being here. You said in your comments that Ms. Noyes was going against the democratic process in reaching those decisions. And I'm just wondering, can you explain what it is that Ms. Noyes actually did?
Some are mentioned in Mr. Insignia's letter, but an example would be at the very first meeting, when a vote was taken and she didn't agree with it, first thing she did was call the ombudsman's office.
And did she file a formal complaint with the ombudsman's office?
She did, to my knowledge.
And do you have the results of that?
I think she could probably answer that for you.
Did the board get a result?
A written report? No, we did not.
Well, then I don't know that a formal complaint would have been lodged.
Well, you asked the question, and Mr. Graber's given you his best understanding
yes.
and advised you that you could ask that question of Ms. Noyes.
Okay, thank you very much. And going on, you spoke about when you were appointed, and we were expected to act in a civil manner. And then you give examples of the conduct, and you're supposed to act in a professional and businesslike manner at the meetings and so on. Can you give us some examples of where Ms. Noyes violated these rules?
Again, I guess we tried to limit our discussion in a public format, but some of the things that were going on was, if the vote didn't go exactly her way, she would continue to approach other individuals to try and coerce, I don't know if that's the correct word, but to try and get her opinion to be the favored one. For example, she went to the mayor on several occasions. She went to various other organizations. She questioned decisions made by staff reports and went over and above beyond contacting the associations in particular. And it's just, is that enough for you?
Yes, you said that she went and spoke with other organizations. What other organizations would she have spoken to?
Head Injuries Association, Ontario Community Gaming Corporation, Ontario Lottery Corporation, the Ombudsman's Office, quite a few.
And those organizations, was she just inquiring, trying to get information, or was she filing complaints or saying things that were
unprofessional? I suggest you ask her.
But you don't have any specifics on that?
We're relying on what she's telling us.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. The second thing that you said there, they're not allowed to make erroneous defamatory or vexatious statements about board members. Can you be specific in what is it that she said about board members that were erroneous, defamatory, or
calling
vexatious?
Calling staff members liars, saying board members have their minds made up beforehand, making rude comments that can be heard by others sitting around the table.
And rude comments as to what would a rude comment be? Could you give an example? A of something that she said?
Trying to think of examples. Comments such as, oh, you know, the vote was predetermined, who was going to be in what position, I have no say-so here, you know. We're not in the inn.
And those are vexatious or erroneous?
In our opinion, yes.
Okay, all right. And then the third one there, not to advance allegations of misconduct that are vexatious. How would that have happened? And can you give me some examples of when that happened?
Probably give you lots. Again, if the vote wasn't going her way, it would be a matter of they've decided already which way it's going. Lots of comments were made. It's the decorum that goes on in a meeting. If you're familiar with meetings, people act in a certain way, and others can be very upsetting in the way a meeting is approached, with, you know, questioning every decision, questioning anything that goes on, you know. Like I say, with staff, it seemed that at every meeting, the staff was being criticized for something. And we just couldn't put up with it anymore. We went a year and a half, you know, before we came to this realization that we can't continue another 2.5-3 years under this type of environment. Just couldn't.
Okay, thank you very much. So you're saying that this has been going on for a year and a half?
She was appointed, yes.
Do you know anyone who has formally addressed these issues with Ms. Noyes?
Yes. Almost every director has mentioned something to her about her behavior. We have asked her, you know, for her resignation earlier. The staff have mentioned to her that, you know, we're sick and tired of being called to question at every meeting.
Anything further, Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much. You asked her to resign?
Correct.
Before?
Yes.
Now, what I'm asking for is, I'm just curious as to, was she actually formally addressed about these issues, like by the board, to say, and I'm saying formally, like they sit down and speak with her and say, look, this isn't acceptable, you need to do this, you need to do that, or?
It took place at every meeting. A formal sit down? No, that wasn't done.
That was never done?
No.
Oh, okay, thank you much. I'm just going to ask the mayor, I'd like to hear what other members of council have to say. I'd like to ask some more questions later, but I don't want to hold the floor up for everybody.
But any other members of council have any questions? Councilor Zanko?
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Graber. Mr. Graber, just so I understand correctly, I did read the report, your minutes, and the confidential memo, but it's my understanding that 7 long-tenure board members, some of which have been a director for over 10 years, so the majority, which is 7, feel this way, excluding Ms. Noyes and Mr. Hill, is that correct?
Correct.
So every other member on the board, excluding Ms. Noyes and Mr. Hill, has felt that the behavior is just not, you know, satisfactory, and in their experience, which again, some over 10 years have never seen such behavior.
Correct.
Thank you.
Any other members of council? Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor DeCamp. Mr. Graber, as part of your presentation, you referenced an appendix, which is a letter, as you stated, from one of your directors. At the top, it says Mike. I'm assuming that's Mike from your board.
Yes, it is. Addressed to the chair.
And this director states, it appears that I will be, he gives a reason why he...
The letter was submitted and should have been marked confidential. I'm not sure if this is the forum to raise anything that's in that.
I'm not raising anything in it. I just have a question regarding the one comment he makes at the beginning, which is, would you please read the below to members of council? Thanks. And I'm just wondering, has Ms. Noyes seen this letter, is my question.
I would not think so.
Right, so this has only been provided to members of council?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other members of council? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. Mr. Graber, is it your belief and the belief of many of the members of the directors on the board that Ms. Noyes' comments were inflammatory and derogatory?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And is it also your belief and the belief system of the directors that the environment became poisonous?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other councillors before I go back to Councillor Lubberts? Councillor Lubberts, back to you.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Mr. Graber, on your second page of your notes here, it said, as well, we understood that we are obligated to abide by the decisions of the majority of the board. And I'm assuming that Ms. Noyes violated this. Can you tell me where she violated any of the decisions that the board made?
I don't have specifics right here in front of me. But many times when the decision did not go as she had indicated, is when she went to outside agencies support for her viewpoint.
And I just need to know, what was it? What was the viewpoint that she was trying to get across to these people, or what was the viewpoint that she was trying to get across to the board?
Several different items.
And one of them being?
Sorry, I can't think of one offhand right now.
Okay, thank you very much. And then it says that we're obligated to refrain from speaking for the organization unless authorized to do so by the board. And are you saying that she was speaking on behalf of the board when she spoke to other organizations, or how?
I would assume that when she contacted Head Injuries Association that she was speaking on behalf of the board to ask questions.
She was just asking questions though, right?
Correct.
Okay, all right. And at your meetings and this conduct that apparently is not proper, was it because she was asking questions, or?
Debate is one thing, okay? And we welcome debate. We welcome different viewpoints. And over the years, we've had many times where that has occurred. But when it gets to the stage where we felt it was becoming poisonous, where people were being called names, being questioned as to why they're on the board, we felt that was just going too far.
Councillor Lubberts?
At the meeting that I guess it was the meeting that the motion was brought forward. Right. Mr. Hill asked at your board meeting,
if the board had discussed the motion to ask Ms. Noyes to resign. And if she didn't, council would, right? Was it your position on this that members of the board met to discuss how to get Ms. Noyes off the committee?
Point of order, Your Worship. I'm just wondering how he has this information where we don't. How did he capture, I don't recall Mr. Graber saying that. How did he capture that in a question?
We don't know if that's what was said, but he's entitled to ask the question.
I spoke with Mr. Hill, and he told me that he asked that question.
Mr. Graber?
That question was asked and answered. No, there was no meeting for that issue.
And the board didn't discuss that with anybody?
Yes, we met with the mayor, we met with the CAO. So the executive felt that there was an issue there. Several of the other board members had come to us asking for some resolution in this matter, and that's when we asked to meet with the mayor and the CAO.
And
that was the date of the meeting.
Was that a resolution of the board as well?
A resolution was passed that night, yes.
To meet with the mayor?
No.
No? Isn't that exactly what Anne-Marie Noyes did? She met with the mayor and without a resolution of your board?
The executive committee met with the mayor and the CAO.
Yes.
So the executive committee, okay, which is the chair, the vice chair, and the secretary, in performing their duties as officers of the corporation, have that right. They don't need a resolution.
The executive of the committee being who? I just need to know.
You've already been told that, Councillor Lubbers.
How many?
Three individuals.
Three individuals met with you and the CAO. But that meeting, was that meeting authorized by the... by a resolution of your board.
That's already been answered, Councillor Lubberts.
No.
The answer was no. It wasn't authorized. Doesn't, according to Mr. Graber, it doesn't have to be authorized.
No. And I'm assuming that if Ms. Noyes goes to the mayor and the CAO, that doesn't have to be authorized as well to speak to them about activities at the board meetings. Is that not correct?
No, you're talking... The three officers of the corporation versus a director. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If the director is going to get to find information on a matter is one thing. To complain about the board or decisions that it makes is another.
Any other questions, Councillor Lubberts?
I don't see where the difference is, but obviously there's another standard there that I don't understand.
Yes.
Further questions, Councillor Lubberts?
At this point, I think maybe I'll wait, and I think we're going to discuss this later in the evening when we bring out the minutes of accept the minutes of the board.
I presume that we will.
Okay, all right, I'll save some of my questions for then.
Good. Thank you very much, Mr. Graber.
Thank you.
That now takes us to Anne-Marie Noyes. Good evening.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you come back. Good evening, Mayor and Council, and thank you for allowing me to address the issue. I understand that Council has received a motion from the Gaming Board to remove me from the Gaming Board due to my behavior. A favorite quote of mine is, if you can't argue the facts, make it about behavior or personality. I think this quote accurately describes this situation. E-bingo and the high American dollar has resulted in considerable increase in bingo revenue, approximately $400,000. The Gaming Board is responsible to make recommendations to Council regarding how this money is distributed. Council should be demanding from the gaming board that a distribution of $400,000 and the approval of additional bingo permits be achieved in a fair, open, and transparent method. Unfortunately, it is my opinion that this is not the case. My transgression would seem to be in questioning the fairness and transparency of the process that guides the allotments that the board has put in place. Board members should take the responsibility seriously, do their homework, and come prepared, willing to participate in a vigorous debate. Be strong advocates for the people they are representing. Board decisions need to be fair, clear, and transparent, sustainable, accountable, and be able to stand up to scrutiny. But just as important, the public has a right to know and participate when appropriate when these decisions affect them. They have a need to know, or how else are they going to benefit from the decisions or understand where they fell short? And when you deal with allocations of money, the above are even more important. Our decisions can and most likely will be challenged. We open ourselves, our board, and council to being accused of providing preferential treatment or lack of disclosure, lack of fairness and transparency. If any of this proves true, we open ourselves to liability, not just from permit holders who feel they have been unfairly dealt with, but the Ontario Charitable Gaming Association. I always try to get as much information as I can before making a decision. I read the policies and bylaws that apply, usually several times. When I notice what appears to be a deviation from the town's policies and procedures and our board's bylaws, I will bring it up at meetings. In this case, there are numerous deviations from the board's bylaw number one that makes one wonder why it's even in place. My questions regarding this are not welcomed by the gaming board or staff and are quickly dismissed. However, today's issue has everything to do with the process that the board has voted on regarding allocation of a significant increase in bingo revenue, estimated to be above $400,000. Recommendations made that I and others have expressed a difference of opinion. There have been dollars put aside from this money, around $75,000, for new permits to be approved. But there will be no public notification of this opportunity. This is reflected in October 29th minutes under inquiries. Mr. Hill asked Mr. Wilson what the process was for new organizations to apply. Mr. Wilson responded to Mr. Hill by telling him to have the organizations contact the office directly, and staff would walk the inquiry organization through the process. Mrs. Noyes inquired as to how potential additional funding availability is communicated to the current and new permittees. You will see in reviewing the minutes there is no response. I can recall the comments, and I'm paraphrasing, made from the manager, that the board knows the various organizations and we can let them know. I commented this was not fair, but a who knows who scenario. The public should be informed. A new process that is now in place is the penalty point process, where a 5% increase is given to all permit holders if they do not exceed 20 penalty points. Although I agree with the measuring assessment tool used, I disagree that the permit holders are not told they are being measured or what is being measured and the resulting consequences. I advocated that the permittees need to know what the assessment criteria is, what the consequences are. They should be given an opportunity for feedback. How else can they work to be in compliance or provide the feedback? Another new process involves the allocation of additional 10% increase to permit holders, based solely on staff's intimate knowledge of the organization that they identify as exemplary, with no reason or rationale provided. I comment and ask questions about the need for the board and the organizations to know why they received or did not receive the additional 10%. This process is not clear and transparent, it is not accountable, it is not measurable, and it opens the board to accusations of giving preferential treatment to some organizations. Staff's intimate knowledge is not a working tool. I even threw in a joke. If the staff won the lottery and moved to Hawaii, where would we all be? The bingo allocations move forward and we are approved by the board with no clarification for the most part. After this meeting, I was very concerned for it was not fair, transparent, or an even playing field, and as important, happening behind closed doors. We are talking about serious money and making judgment calls with little and insufficient information. Knowing this, I felt it necessary to go to the mayor and the CAO and express my concerns regarding the decisions made. The gaming board is an employee of the town of Fort Erie. I emphasized I was expressing my point of view, which was a minority position. But I felt it necessary that they understand what was going on behind closed doors. The manager informed the board that I had gone to the mayor and I was questioning the actions of the board on a number of items. Needless to say, the board was upset with me, and at that time asked me to resign. This is why we are here today, that I continue to question the fairness and transparency of the process in allocating additional bingo revenue. And I went to the mayor and the CAO to express these concerns. At board meetings, I do not shout or yell, do not call people names, or write nasty things on blogs. I come prepared. I am vocal and a strong advocate for the public's need to know. I believe in fairness and transparency. The increase in bingo revenue should have been a good news story. We should have made the headlines. But little is publicly known about the increase in bingo revenue, with the exception of the $1 million check presentation. Charitable and non-profit organizations should be excited and look forward to how their organizations may benefit and access these funds. Instead, everything is happening behind closed doors. They have no opportunity for input. They are not informed of the process. I hope this council will take a closer look at the process regarding bingo revenue distribution and ensure that it is fair, clear, and transparent with no preferential treatment and an even playing field. Council is required to approve the bingo allocation. You cannot delegate this. Council either chooses to agree or disagree with the recommendations put forth by the board. Ultimately, it is council's responsibility and liability. It is my opinion that removing me from the gaming board does not mitigate the problems of the current questionable and unclear processes currently being used to determine the gaming board's recommendations to council. Remember the earlier quote, if you can't argue the facts, make it about personality. Now, I'm going to take a drink of water and try to address some of the concerns. As you notice, there are very few specifics given in Mr. Graber's thing, because it would be pretty hard, because most of the stuff he said never happened. I called the ombudsman office, not at the first meeting, probably not until about the third or the fourth meeting, and it was based on whether these meetings should be open and closed, and do they fall under the municipal law of open and closed meetings. Well, within my right to do so, I was told that they did not fall within and that meetings could be closed. In his request that I, in his accusation that I went to the Ontario Community Gaming Corporation and the Ontario Lottery Corporation, never did. Don't know where he got his information, but he is incorrect. Did Google it, but I think I'm entitled to that. He said I approached other individuals to coerce them after the vote. And I think he referred to my coercing the mayor and the CEO. I don't think either one of them that I could coerce, and basically it was a phone call to them. And I appreciated their time. The other organization I did go to was the head injury, because in one of the allocations they were given 5%, not the 15%. And I asked why. I was given three reasons why they did not qualify for the 15%. I went to the head injury, well, I didn't went. I called the head injury society, and I know a little bit about the head injury society because I work with clients that have head injuries. All the three reasons given were incorrect. And my bringing that back to the board and addressing the staff member and saying, listen, the reasons you gave us for the head injury society were incorrect. I talked to them, and they're not correct. That is calling a staff a liar. That's supposedly when I called staff a liar, because I questioned the information that was provided. I don't think I've ever made a rude comment. Do I roll my eyes sometimes and sigh? Probably, because I'm sometimes very frustrated. When the vote is called by the chair, I do not continue the conversation. I do not object. I vote, may shake my head, but we go on. When they're saying that I'm thinking that the staff, that I criticize the staff, my understanding of their interpretations, when I ask staff questions, it's because I don't trust the staff. And asking them questions is criticizing staff. That 2 + 2 makes 4 in their book. It doesn't in mine. Trying to think of some of the other things that should hang on. Again, to my knowledge, I have never made any erroneous comments. I do not accuse the committee of being unduly influenced by staff, but I will tell you, when I ask another board member why, please explain it to me, why you're taking this position, I would say 9 out of 10 times, regardless of which board member I ask, with the exception of John Hill, I get, I trust staff. That is the answer to pretty much every question when I question a board member directly, saying, okay, like, don't you have any concerns about the process? Isn't it important for the public to know? The answer is, I trust staff. It has nothing to do with trusting staff or not trusting staff. It's making sure that the process you are putting in place is the correct one. And the reason it's happened 18 months ago is because that's when the money became available. This has everything to do about the control of that $400,000. And I think you as council may want to kind of think a little bit about if it's up to the 3 staff members to put forth the recommendation for the additional 10%. In some cases, you're talking over $10,000. With the restructuring that's happening, we now have 1 person. How is that process going to work?
Councilor Noyes, you're now at 13 minutes, and you may have further to add. I don't know.
Okay, I guess just a few things. This is not a popularity contest. I've sat on council for 4 terms. Everyone here knows how I behave in committees and on council. I'm professional. I don't throw insults. I don't call people names. I don't wish them harm. We may not be on each other's Christmas list, and I don't think I'm on anybody's Christmas list with the exception of John Hill. But that pretty much is, it makes no sense to remove someone because they have a difference of opinion and they're willing to express it and be a strong advocate. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Noyes. Just before I go to other counselors, I'm not sure if I got this correctly. Did you say that you've never accused members of the board of being unduly influenced by staff? Did you say that, or did I mishear that?
Well, I think I say that they, I think you and, when you and I've talked, I did say that I think that they are so into this, how do you say, position that staff can do no wrong, and that they tend to fall into line, try to follow all of staff's recommendations and hesitate to question staff because they don't think it's their duty to question staff.
I was only trying to capture what I thought you had said this evening, which was that you've never accused the board members of the board of being unduly influenced by staff. I thought I heard that. Maybe I didn't.
No, I don't. I did say that, and yes, I don't think that I have actually accused them of being unduly influenced by staff, but I do think that they follow staff's recommendations without question, and then they take issue with those people who do and take that as a criticism.
Thank you. Do any members of council have any questions of Ms. Noyes?
Thank you, Mayor Cupp. Thank you, Ms. Noyes, for presenting your point of view tonight. So have no other board members ever questioned staff on any issues in the year plus since you have been there?
Oh, absolutely. They do a few times. Yeah, absolutely.
And who has the final decision? Is it the staff recommendation comes forward and you guys are just privy to seeing what staff are going to do, or does the board actually vote to adopt the recommendations?
The vote. The board votes.
The board votes.
Of course.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other counselors? Councilor Luberts.
Yes. Thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Anne-Marie, thank you very much for coming forward tonight. And I just need to clarify the ombudsman. You called the ombudsman just to ask questions about closed session meetings. Is that correct?
I've actually called the ombudsman twice. Once was just to, as an inquiry, to say, okay, is this, does this fall under their, you know, the municipal law for closed and open door meetings? Then I called them again after a delegate came to our committee. Neil Campbell came, and he talked a little bit in question about the open and closed meetings and things like that, and said, why are your meetings closed? And there's a public perception out there, you know, that things are happening that we should know about. I won't tell you what Neil Campbell said. I'll let him say it. And so after that meeting, and because there's been so many changes to the municipal law, yes, I did go back to the ombudsman to see if indeed any of the rules had changed that would then make this an open, would it cause these meetings to be open. And the decision again was that, no, they do not have to be open.
So your call was more just to inquire for some information, and is that, it wasn't,
well, I've known,
you weren't there to,
I wanted to
question
know.
Any of the board's decision.
Why don't you let Ms. Noyes answer the question?
I wanted to know whether the criteria for open and closed meetings, whether this board fell within it or without, outside it.
Councilor Lubberts.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me just get the delegates, the other delegates. Mr. Graber was here earlier, and he said that that you are supposed to conduct yourself as a professional in business-like manner. Can you comment on that?
I do conduct myself in a business-like manner.
And you're not to make any erroneous or defamatory or vexatious statements about board members. Have you ever done that?
Not to my knowledge. The answer is no.
No,
if
just
that's not sufficient
obviously
enough.
We're hearing something from the back. I'm wondering if somebody has a comment in the back that they would like
to. Well, Councillor Lubberts, you're confined to asking questions of the delegate, and I would ask members of the audience to allow us to do our business without comment or interjection, please. Councillor Lubberts.
I just need to get some clarification on how this, these questions get asked at your board meetings. And I know I had some discussion with you, and you said that previously, before other members were on the board, if you were to ask questions, you were asked for a seconder, and you wouldn't get a seconder, so your points or your questions or your concerns or issues wouldn't be addressed. Is that correct?
Yes, Councillor Lucas. I can give you a few examples. Is that in one meeting, an organization, I think I can mention the organization, COPE, was not given the 15%. Behind the board, it was what it was. The following meeting, the manager talked about COPE and commented what a wonderful organization it was, how it provides a safety net for a lot of the population, and spoke very favorably about COPE. So I asked, I says, well, everything you've said is wonderful about COPE, and I agree. Why didn't they get the 15% the meeting before? He said, I'm not going to answer that question. Yeah, he was not going to answer my question. I've asked fellow board members to please explain to me, because I don't understand the process being fair and transparent, how they can see it as being fair and transparent. Can you please explain it to me? Their answer is, I trust the staff, or I don't have to. So is there some contentious issues? Yes. 99% of them in the last year and a half have been about the bingo allocations. I can't really recall any other, let's say, heated discussion that didn't have to do with the decisions being made by the board in regarding the bingo allocations, and me being a very strong advocate that for the public's need to know, for public input, and you have Councillor Nutt there. He was at most of the meetings. I would trust he'd be fair and honest, and I don't know what he's going to say. I don't think I've ever been this horrible board member they're trying to describe me to be. Perhaps I'll be surprised by Councillor Nutt's comments, but I don't think so.
Councillor Noyes, I think the question was whether you required a seconder in order to ask a question at the meetings.
Before, not a question at the meetings. If I wanted to put a motion on the floor.
Well, okay, but that was the question. Are you
not required? Not a seconder for a question, but a seconder for a motion. And before John Hill was on the board, I would say 99% of the motions I put on the floor were not seconded and therefore were not discussed.
Councilor Lubers, does that get to your question?
Yes. Thank you very much. Anne-Marie, you're being accused here of not abiding by the decisions of the majority of the board. And once the decision is made, have you ever gone outside the board and tried to get the vote changed? Or, I mean, are you not abiding by the decisions that the board makes?
I guess that's a yes and a no, because I don't think I was trying to coerce the board members. I was trying to get information that was not provided or the information that I thought was incorrect. And specifically, it was about the Head Injury Society that, I said that the three reasons they gave why they did not get the 15%, I had a pretty good feeling it was not correct, but I checked with the Head Injury Board, not the whole board, but two members, and they also reinforced that, no, the three reasons given were not correct. Then I also went to the mayor and the CAO to express my concerns about the processes being put in place. Now, I think that's what Mr. Graber was referring to. Again, everything to do with the bingo allocation additional funds.
Yes, thank you very much. There's been some changes in the gaming corporation and changes with now AGCO is not a part of the bingo process, I guess, that we have in the town. And our lotteries process now is all done through OLG. And I'm just wondering, has your board been notified and given all the information about the changes since the OLG has been brought forward?
I think you're referring to the new setup with the e-bingos, and I can't
remember. Yeah, the OGCA, I think it's the
OCG, Ontario Charitable Gaming Association, the answer to that, and I did miss a few meetings, but I did read all the minutes. My answer to that is that other than a brief comment here and there that things are changing, the answer is no. We have never been provided with the information. I can tell you at the last meeting, I saw an acronym I was not familiar with, which was the CGCA, which is the Charitable Gaming Center Association, which I think before was called the Charitable Hall Association, but now is called this other CGCA. So I looked up the acronym and I looked up the information. And I was, I guess surprised is not an adequate word, but I'll use that. I was surprised at the changes that had occurred, at least changes to me. I did not know this was the situation, that had occurred since eBingo was introduced, and how the municipal's role had changed, and all the rules and regulation changes in regards to this new organization and the charity coordinator's role, and how that position could play such a valuable role in regards to the bingo allotments and not allotments but allocations. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, but you weren't provided with any of the information at a board level. At least it wasn't given to you.
Well, again, I don't want to say, I hate the inclusive term. Was there a comment made here and there? Like, yes, the rules are changing. Yes, now this is, this is what we have to do. probably here and there. And like I said, it was the last meeting that we were given some information about the CGCA that had me do some investigation and say, okay, what exactly is this? I'm not familiar with this. And that's the type of person I am. If I see something, hear something, I'll look into it. I have a need to know.
All right, thank you very much. And you mentioned something about the allocations of funds and that now there's over $400,000 that permit holders are receiving through bingos. And I'm just trying to get some clarification of how you're interpreting this money is going to be allocated. I know you mentioned something about organizations are going to maybe bring in some new organizations. And how are those new organizations going to be decided?
Well, I think I did briefly address that in my presentation, is that there's not going to be any public information out there, at least not to date. I know that I passed a motion that basically saying there should be an even playing field. I think Councillor Nutt was at the meeting and he actually commented that some of the organizations during budget time had come to council and he suggested that they apply for a bingo permit because there was more money available. And I think I made the comment, well, now the genie is out of the bottle. Shouldn't the general public know? Should this not be an even playing field? So I passed a motion.
Moved a motion.
I'm sorry?
You moved a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. I'm sorry. I moved a motion. I was asked to have a friendly addition or amendment, whatever you want to call it, that the existing, okay, basically the motion that I put on the floor was basically that no new bingo permits be allocated until September and the public is notified, so it's an even playing field. I was asked, would I consider adding to the motion that those organizations that were already in the queue or had already started the process, could they continue with the process? And I didn't see a problem with that because it had already started. So I said, we added that to the motion, particularly organization, so we added that to it. And the motion passed. The interesting thing was that the following meeting, the chair came and he wanted that motion to reconsider. So we did a motion for reconsider and that all happened. So the motion was reconsidered and ultimately defeated. The interesting thing is at the time the chair's reason for the reconsideration is that, if my recall is correct, is that we shouldn't be handing out money until we know all the, that the dollars are there. We don't want to make promises for dollars that we may not meet. Let's make sure that the money is in the bank, so to speak, or however it's not really in a bank, but you guys know what I mean. That was his reason, and I said, okay, fine. So really what he should have done is removed the addition, which said that those who are currently in the queue or who started the process would then be excluded until September was an even playing field. Unfortunately, the whole motion was defeated, which meant now anybody can apply at any time, particularly if you know to apply. So I asked the chair, I said, I have a lack of understanding. I said, what exactly, I mean, you started this thing with saying you wanted to make sure that all the money was kind of there before we start allocating it or promising it or giving bingo permits, but now there is nothing. And I said, can you please explain it to me? I don't understand. His comment to me was, I understand it. That's all that counts. Okay, move on. Is there another?
Councillor Lubberts, do you have any other questions that relate to the issue before us, which is the resolution to have Ms. Noyes removed from the Gaming Corporation Board?
Yes, yes. Thank you very much. I understand where the answer that you just gave, but I'm trying to wrap my head around this whole idea of not going to the public and asking any organization that wants to apply for a bingo permit to be able to come forward. It seems to me that this is...
Councillor Lewis, I'm going to rule that out of order. You're getting into the operation of the gaming corporation. That's not really the issue. That may be the issue for Ms. Noyes, but the issue is whether she should be removed from the gaming corporation. We could talk about policy. We could talk about what the gaming corporation does till the cows come home. That's not really the issue.
Well, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop, but I'm asking questions of the delegate for her presentation, which she brought up to the allocations of funds, and this whole motion that has been brought forward to have her removed from the board is a result of her actions at the board meetings and her asking questions regarding allocations of funds.
Okay, so you've got that in. I've made my ruling. So that last question that you were going to ask, I've ruled out of order. If you have another question that's in order, please proceed.
I don't think that I'm out of order. When a delegation comes forward, Mayor Redekop, I can ask the delegation on the information that the delegation spoke about. And the delegation spoke about allocations of funds, and I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to get this allocations of funds.
As a matter of courtesy, I permitted the delegate to speak about a variety of things beyond the 10 minutes that she was allocated. That doesn't make your question in order. But if you disagree with me, there is a procedure to deal with that, and you can challenge the chair.
I'll challenge the chair.
Okay. Madam Clerk, just refresh my memory on how that goes. It's been quite some time before the ruling of the chair has been challenged. My recollection is that I've made my ruling that the question is out of order. The councillor has challenged that ruling, and then I believe council members are asked to vote on whether they support the ruling of the chair or not.
That is correct, Your Worship. I'm just checking to see what the vote is, whether it's majority or two-thirds. Thank you for your patience. It's through a majority vote.
Thank you. Okay, so, Councillor Lubberts, for your benefit, you've challenged my ruling that your question was out of order. That means that the council can now vote on whether to uphold my ruling, in which case they would vote in favor of my ruling, or to support you, in which case they would vote against my ruling. So I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the ruling? Opposed? So the ruling is upheld. You still have the floor if you wish to ask questions that go to the heart of the matter, which is whether Noyes should be removed from the Gaming Corporation board.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Anne-Marie, you were been accused of violating the rules of procedure by the town, and I'm assuming bylaw number one, which I've heard about from the Gaming Corporation. Right.
Point of order, Your Worship. He just said accused by the town. I don't think that's an accurate statement.
No. The rules of procedure for the town.
Sorry. What was the question?
No, she's been accused of violating the rules of procedure that are set out by the town.
And
not
you said
by the town.
The town.
No, not by the town.
I believe
we haven't accused her.
The rules of procedure.
Yeah. I believe what the wording was generally accepted director's code of ethics. Was what Mr. Graber referred to.
Yes, that may be true, Mayor Redekop, but if you look at the points that they have here, 1, 2, and 3, I think those are in our rules of procedure, are they not?
Well, that wasn't the nature of the delegation by Mr. Graber. I don't believe he referred to our rules of procedure.
Yes, but when he quotes the rules of procedure, are they not the rules of procedure?
Well, there's no specific reference to these rules of procedure, and these words aren't found verbatim in our rules of procedure. The gist is there, and that's what Mr. Graber indicated was what he was talking about when he made reference to generally accepted director's code of ethics. In essence, good behavior and good conduct, which is the essence of our rules of procedure, quite correct. But I don't believe he made specific reference to them. In any event, please proceed with your question.
Yes, thank you very much. So, and I guess to the bylaw number one or something. I don't know bylaw. I haven't seen bylaw number one, so I don't know what it reads. But From your point of view, has the board violated the rules, procedure, or bylaw number one in any manner?
If I can, not wanting to change your question, but perhaps answer it the only way I think is appropriate, is that I don't think it's a question of violation. I think it's sometimes a question of compliance, that we have a bylaw number one that several instances we are not compliant with. And I have spoken of that often in the meetings. And again, what else to say about that? I will say that one of the things that I was accused of, and I think Mayor Redekop asked me about, unduly influenced my staff, and perhaps that's going to get into the rules of conduct. And I said, I think they're unduly influenced by staff, but what I should have said is that I think the current board members have a comfort level because they have been working with staff for over a decade, and they tend to agree with staff because of that comfort level. I'm not saying they're wrong, I'm not saying they're right, but there's an obvious comfort level that they have with staff and staff's recommendations. That's why newcomers, like myself and John, have a hard time when we want to express a difference of opinion or when we ask staff questions. We don't have that comfort level yet. If anybody knows me, they know I do the research. When we're talking about conduct, and I think that's where your question was, it's actually in your ABC handbook that I think it applies to us. And if you want, I can read them out. But one of the interesting things I read under ground rules, which kind of perhaps make light of this situation, a bit of humor, is that we're supposed to change I laugh when I read this. We're supposed to change chairs so that members sit in different locations from previous meetings. I am guilty of not changing chairs. I tend to sit in the same chair every meeting, so I am guilty of that.
Well, I don't think that was one of the indictments against you. Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. I think at this time I'll hold off until the report comes forward because I have some additional questions, but I think maybe they're going to be answered by staff.
Thank you. Any other members of council have any questions of the delegation? Councillor Butler?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Worship. I have one or two questions, actually. Before going to the ombudsman, did you make any inquiries elsewhere? So would you have contacted the clerk for clarification? Would you have?
I think I did. I think I talked to Carolyn at the time. And I did mention at the meeting, I did ask why the meetings were closed. Meetings.
It's Carolyn?
Carolyn Kett. Oh, I'm sorry. She was a clerk at the time. And I was told at the meeting that it was done by resolution of the board many, many years ago. I asked for a copy of the resolution, and I was told by the manager to go find it. So
is this your first term
I'm sorry, I should let you finish the question.
No, that's okay. Is this your first term on this board?
I was appointed halfway through the last term. I think this is probably your three for me.
Okay, so then Carolyn Kett was
yes.
The clerk at that time.
Yes, but I did mention to the board at the time that I would be calling the ombudsman, that, again, I thought that it would meet the municipal requirements for open meetings.
So your first time to call the ombudsman was when you were put onto the board halfway through the first term? I'm under the impression that the call to the ombudsman is within the last 18 months.
You're right, and you're right. Okay.
That means she's right.
There were actually two calls to the ombudsman. One after I was on the committee for a few months, and I was surprised that the meetings were closed, and I already told you the response I got from the manager, that I felt, okay, I need to look into this. And then I went again because we had a delegation. Neil Campbell came, and he was questioning why the meetings were closed, and he expressed his own concerns about...
So you went to the ombudsman twice for the same issue?
No. Well, the first time was just an inquiry. I said, an organization that's incorporated by the municipality, does it fall under the rules or whatever? So it was an inquiry. I was very specific. I was not asking for them to do an investigation. I was not putting in a complaint. I just wanted to know in general terms, did this fall outside or inside the rules? I got a very quick response in a day or two to say that it did fall within the rules, outside the rules, that it didn't apply to them. And then I thought, okay, rules have changed, things have changed, the Municipal Act has changed. I also had a much better understanding of what bylaw number one was and a much better understanding on how this incorporated body existed and worked, and also the lack of compliance with bylaw number one, which I thought have influenced.
I'm sorry to interrupt. So you mentioned that you're new to the board, but having been halfway through in the previous term, then you have approximately 3 years, 6 months, 3.5 years. Would that be fair to say?
You have
3.5 years experience. So you're not brand new to it. You made a mention with respect to 99% of inquiries were not seconded and therefore were not discussed. So does that mean that no individual seconded any motion that you brought in or inquiry that you brought up at the board level?
Pretty much.
Okay, so that would also mean that Mr. Hill didn't second.
No, Mr. Hill wasn't there at the time. I was saying that before Mr. Hill came.
I don't understand. So we're talking about the last 18 months. We're not talking about 2 years prior. Okay. We're talking about the last 18 months, correct?
So, no. Ms. Noyes indicated that she couldn't get a seconder before this term of council started when the makeup of the board changed and apparently Mr. Hill was appointed to the board. Prior to that, she didn't have someone that would second her motions.
Thank you for that clarification. And then I have one last question, if you don't mind. You implied that the funds were not being distributed appropriately, correct? $400,000.
I don't think I said the word inappropriately. I think I said that the funds were not being distributed in a clear, fair, transparent process.
Okay. I wrote down that you said not being distributed appropriately. So are you...
I'm sorry for interrupting. I think one of my comments at the end was that the council needs to make sure that the funds are being distributed appropriately in a clear, fair, transparent, et cetera, manner.
Okay.
And
Councillor Butler?
My follow-up question to that is, what leads you to believe that those funds are not being allocated properly?
Again.
Well, that, Councillor Butler, that kind of gets into the same question that I just ruled Councillor Lubert's for being out of order. So I'm gonna say that doesn't help us. Do you have any other questions that I can rule in order? Okay, Councillor Basiro, you had your hand up. No. Any other councillors? Well, Councillor Lubert, you said you weren't going to ask any more questions.
Yes, but I can, right?
You can.
Thank you very much. Anne-Marie, just a couple quick questions before I end. excuse me. Were you ever formally approached by the board about your conduct at the board meetings?
Never. Unequivocally? Never. I will tell you that the ambiance before the board meetings, it's fine. We're not throwing daggers at each other. You know, we're wishing each other well. I asked Mr. Graver about his health. I'm a therapist. I'm always interested. I ask Ms. Brigantino about her family. I know some of the family members. You know, it's a pleasant conversation before the board meetings. There's no throwing of daggers. And after the meetings, I leave
Ms. Noyes, with all due respect, you answered the question.
Okay, but
the answer was you were never approached by the board.
I was never formally approached by the chair, never formally approached by the manager, never even informally approached by anyone. Forget the formality. No one has ever said, hey, come on, Amory, cool it a little bit, or you're coming on too strong.
Mr. Lubritz, do you have another question?
Yes, thank you very much. And my final question is, when Mr. Graber was here, I asked him the question if you had been asked to resign before, and he indicated that you had been asked to resign on other occasions. And is this the first time that you've ever been asked to
The only time I was ever asked to resign was two meetings ago, and it was based on the fact that I had gone to the mayor to discuss my concerns about the processes that were being put in place. That was the only time, even the only inkling, they said, well, actually, Mr. Kavatovic said something under his breath, something, well, I wouldn't say it was under his breath, said something to the nature of, we should all march into town hall tomorrow and resign. And then Mr. Graber said something to the fact that we shouldn't resign, she should. That was in the heat of the moment after that discussion that I went to the mayor. And if I can interject, and I know this is kind of out of order, but...
Well, it is out of order, Ms. Noyes. It is out of order. You were asked a question. You've given the answer. I believe the answer was that prior to April the 21st, when this resolution was put forward and passed by the Gaming Corporation, I believe what you've just said is you were asked to resign.
That was the first and only time. And in 3.5 years...
But I thought you said the meeting before this.
No.
There was some discussion.
Oh, in the meeting before, I was asked to resign.
All right.
Okay. The last meeting, there was a motion put on the floor. There was zero discussion or I shouldn't say zero. There was a one question by Mr. Hill asking...
We get that. Okay. We understand that.
But
the answer is, prior to the night the resolution was put forward that we're dealing with this evening, there was another meeting, and at that meeting you were asked to resign?
It was commented. The comment was made by Mr. Graber. Now, I will say that in 3.5 years, and I mean, Councillor Butler brought it up, it might seem like a long time that I've been there. Our meetings are very few and infrequent. I would guess that I probably attended maybe 12 to 15 meetings in that period of time. Some of my own personal issues that I could not attend for several months. I think I was absent the summer months and that. So even though it may seem that I'm not a newcomer, 3.5 years seems like a long time, but it's really only, I think, 12 to 15 meetings that occurred within that period of time.
Dr. Lubritz, you're finished?
Yes. No, thank you. I just want some clarification. Maybe I should make the question a little bit more clear. I asked, the first question was, were you formally asked or were you formally approached by your behavior, which was no. Now I need, were you formally approached and asked to resign prior to the motion being brought forward? Because I know, yes, there was some comment like, well, we shouldn't have to resign, she should resign, but you, that's not a formal request to resign. That was just a comment that was made, and then the following meeting, the motion was on the floor. So were you ever formally asked to resign prior to the motion being brought forward?
No, that was the only formal request.
And you were, no one ever approached you?
Never.
No. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so that concludes, thank you very much, Ms. Noyes. That concludes the delegations. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we're going to come back. We'll deal with the consent agenda items. Well, Mr. Graber, no, we're finished with the delegations. We have representatives on the gaming board. Perhaps they'll make comment with respect to it. I can certainly make some clarification. I entirely agree with you that there are some misapprehensions, but I think that gets to the heart of the resolution that is before us. So we're going to take a 10-minute break. We'll come back at 8:47, and then we'll continue on. I'd like to call this council meeting back to order. We're now at the consent agenda items, and I have at least one item to be removed. That's the item 9.3A relative to the court of revision and Councillor Nutt's pecuniary interest. Sorry, 9.2.3A. Agendas used to be a lot simpler, Madam Clerk. Either that or I'm getting old, or both. We also have the Gaming Corporation minutes, and they probably should be removed from the package as well, Councillor Lubberts. So those are two items from the consent agenda. Are there any others? 9.23A and 9.23G. Councillor Nutt, you have the resolution, and could you read into the record? Sorry, Councillor Passero.
Could we remove D as well?
Sure. That would be the Municipal Heritage Standing Committee minutes. Anyone else? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. I'm just wondering if council would be okay with dealing with the Gaming Corporation minutes before we deal with any other of the items. The delegates are still here, and I'm sure that some of them would like to go home or go have something to eat, and I'm wondering if it would be all right to deal with those minutes first.
I don't have a problem with that. We'd have to, Madam Clerk, see any problem with that?
I wouldn't see any problem unless a member of council objected.
Anyone here object to dealing with that first? Okay, so Councillor Nutt, why don't you, so aside, I beg your pardon? Zero. I have that, so the resolution and the consented, the item that's been removed then, which is item 9.2.3G, really calls for us to receive the minutes. I believe that if we are going to deal with the resolution that was before us and discussed by the delegations, we would also have to move to approve resolution 21-16. That on the floor. Butler? So then you're moving that we receive the minutes of the Gaming Corporation, item 9.2.3G, and approve resolution 21.16 of those minutes. Is there a seconder for that?
I'll second.
Councillor Nutt? Okay, that's on the floor for questions or comments. Mr. Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Given the light of listening to the two delegates, I'm not going to support this resolution. There's been some accusations made, and people are saying that someone did this and someone did that. That wasn't recorded in the minutes other than the one time. And when we asked delegates if there had ever been any formal complaints brought forward, or were there ever any formal decisions made, or was Anne Marie Noyes formally asked and approached by her behavior, that never happened. There were some comments made. If other board members said something to Ms. Noyes about her behavior, that is not a formal, anything formal that is brought forward to the board. I'm looking at how the board operates in itself and how they conduct their business when it comes to permit holders. And if permit holders are in violation of the rules, which they accused Anne Marie Noyes of being in violation of, there's a first infraction, second infraction, third infraction, or whoever it goes, and then there's a dismissal or a removal of their permit. But in this case, I see where we're going, and what they're asking us to do is they're asking us to forego the first three procedures and just go right to removal. And if the board has a problem with a board member, I believe that they should address the issue when the issue arises and go through the same sort of process. I don't know that they would just jump to the conclusion that, you know, you're removed. It would appear, because they allowed this so-called behavior to go on for this many months, and nobody said anything. And now they're saying, oh, this has happened for so long, and now we need to just get rid of it and remove the person from the board. And I don't think that that's the way to go. You have rules on how you take care of your permit holders, and I believe you should be following the same rules. Now, as far as Anne-Marie Noyes going to other organizations and asking questions and inquiring about whether you fall under the guidelines and what rules you need to follow, I do the same thing as a counselor. I go outside of this council and I get other information, right? And I go and I verify what staff has told me sometimes. And when I read the Municipal Act about my role as a counselor, that is exactly what I'm supposed to do, is get all the information to make sure that I'm making the right decision. And if that means that I have to ask a million questions to get the information that I'm looking for, and if I don't get the information, then I can go outside of this council and ask for that information. A perfect example of it was last week when we were discussing all of this in closed session. And I went outside and I found the report that the ombudsman had made against our former mayor. And I presented that to staff and council and our town solicitor. And here we are in open session because it didn't qualify under the exemption. Now, am I guilty of something? I don't think so. I went outside of this here board, this council, and I got more information. And I tried to bring it back to council, and consequently staff agreed, and they held this meeting in open session. So if Anne-Marie Noyes is not complying to your rules that you say, and it's the director's code of ethics, which there is none, I'm assuming that the director's code of ethics is something that is your code of ethics, because it's not the code of conduct, because I asked about that and I was out of order for asking about the code of conduct, so, or the rules of procedure of the town. So I don't
think just for clarification,
we can
Councilor Lubberts, just for clarification, you weren't ruled out of order asking questions about the procedure. You ruled out of order when you wanted to delve into the allocation process.
Okay, all right. So I don't believe that we can honestly sit here and say that we were going to go right to infraction 4 of having someone removed from a board when this is the first time that any of us, that I was ever informed as a counselor. So it's quite obvious that it wasn't formally addressed to this council except for this one time. And now the board has never formally addressed Anne-Marie Noyes, not a first time, not a second time, not a third time. This is the first time formally addressed. And if you're going to do a process, you need to do your process exactly the way you do your process with other permit holders or individuals. So I'm not going to support the motion.
Thank you, Councilor Lubberts. Anyone else? Just for clarification, before we vote, there were some things said about the gaming corporation, and the public should be aware of the fact that the town gaming corporation, is subject to scrutiny of the Ontario Lottery Gaming Corporation and the Alcohol Gaming Corporation of Ontario. And there's frequent requirements in order to ensure that the gaming corporation does comply with that provincial legislation. So if there are no other comments, Councillor Knight?
Yes, Your Worship. Thank you. Just a few comments on this. I think that for the benefit of the people at home, there's been some confusion between last term when Ms. Noyes was on there and this term, because she and Mr. Hill were appointed under the same bylaw, 10-2015. Also, in her, she mentioned that she spoke to the former clerk, Ms. Kett, and since then, I know that the rules of procedure for council have been updated twice. But irregardless, the gaming corporation doesn't follow those. They follow Robert's Rules of Order. So that's a non-factor in all of this. Also, she stated that in 3.5 years, she was only able to attend 12 or 15 meetings. Yet earlier in her presentation, she stated that she always does her homework. She always reads the minutes. So I have to ask, do you, because you weren't at the meetings, did you not read those minutes? But you said that you... She stated that she does always do her homework, so I have to assume that even though she only attended 10 to 15 meetings, she was apprised of all the meetings and all the minutes that and everything that went in her place. Has her behavior, because that's the real issue here. Some of her behavior in a professional setting, I work in a professional setting every day, in a corporate setting every day. So as she said, there were no daggers thrown before the meeting. I didn't really see any behavior after the meeting, but some of the behavior during the meeting, not just by her, but by others as well, somewhat was unprofessional. She stated that she was never asked for her resignation. I sat in the meeting beside Larry Graver. He pointed across the table directly at her and said, "I'm not leaving tonight until we have your resignation." As an officer of the corporation, the gaming corporation, at that point, he did ask for her resignation. That did happen. So, for the most part, my experience with her has been that she's wrapped up more in non-factors than the purview of what that gaming corporation is about, which is the allocations of the money, making sure that it is. The fact that there's 400,000, part of that 400,000 was asked to be set aside for the fluctuation in the rate between the US dollar and the Canadian dollar so that we have the ability to stabilize the charities. The dollar was volatile at the time. We also set aside 5 brand new allocations, and all the money is going to be out by the appropriate year's end. It's all going to be pushed out to the charities as it should be. As far as her making the comment about the staff's intimate knowledge, when I questioned that to the general manager on a side and we had the discussion, I asked him what that entailed. And that entailed looking at the files, seeing who is in compliance, because there are rules that the charities have to abide by. There are reports that they have to submit to the government. They do have obligations. And part of that was that we asked staff to go back and review all the files. And that, to me, was the intimate knowledge that the staff spoke to. They went back, they looked at the files, they came back, and they told us, based on who was able to submit their reports on time, who had the workforce to handle the bingos, who could manage the extra allocations, because we lose out if those allocations are not out there. We lose out as a community. And all of that was laid out very clearly. I understood it 100%. But I just asked a simple question. What does the intimate knowledge mean? And it was explained to me right away with no resistance from staff whatsoever. Frankly, the staff have a tough job, and they always act in a professional manner, and they do a very good job. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Any other councillors before I go back to Councillor Lubberts? Councillor Lubberts?
Yes, thank you very much. I'm just making a couple notes here. I just want to comment on a couple things. Mayor Redekop, your comment about the the Community Gaming Corporation having to have to follow the rules of the Ontario OLG and so on. And I think you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that the contract that is with the OLG to have bingos in the town of Fort Erie is held by the town of Fort Erie. And the gaming corporation is just given by the town of Fort Erie the administrative rights and to do administrative work on behalf of the town of Fort Erie. So the contract is actually with the town of Fort Erie, between the town of Fort Erie and the OLG. And you can correct me if I'm wrong.
What I said was that the gaming corporation is subject to the rules of the OLG and the ACGO.
Yes, but
they are.
The contract between with the OLG is with the town of Fort Erie and not the gaming corporation.
Well, we've delegated that authority. But
the administrative work.
Whatever your point is, Councillor Lubritz, it's lost on me, but you've made the point.
Yes, I made the point. And as far as the rules of procedure being a non-factor with the gaming corporation and Councillor Nutt's comments, and that the gaming corporation just has to follow the Roberts Rules of Order, maybe the clerk can answer this and clarify this. The gaming committee is a board of the town of Fort Erie, and they follow the rules of procedure of the town of Fort Erie through the ABC handbook. Is that correct?
Madam Clerk?
Through your worship, that is incorrect. As far as I understand, they are a separate corporation incorporated under the Corporations Act.
The gaming corporation is, but we appoint the board. That is a town council appointed board. The gaming corporation is a separate corporation. Their board is appointed by the town of Fort Erie. Is that correct?
Well, we all know that. We appoint the board. That doesn't mean that they have to follow our rules. They follow different rules.
It's my understanding that all boards and committees of the town of Fort Erie are subject to the same rules of procedure as the town of Fort Erie.
We just asked the clerk. Maybe the clerk wants to delve further into it.
Through you, Your Worship, I'll try. I'd have to look up. Not every committee has formally adopted the council rules of procedure. Not every committee and board has done so.
Councillor Lubritz?
Then I think maybe we need to address that, because of my understanding that the, I sit on the Crystal Beach BIA, and they were all given an ABC handbook, and I'll read the ABC handbook, but it's my understanding that as a board of the town of Fort Erie, you follow the rules of procedure the same as council. So I will look into that. Another comment I'd just like to make is the Councillor Nutt made the comment about the intimate knowledge of the organizations, and I don't know that it was so much the intimate knowledge of the organizations that Ms. Noyes was referring to was based on. She was that the intimate knowledge was based on the 5% that was going to be allocated through the 20-point system. So if you had 20 points or less than 20 points, then you were going to be allocated the 5%. What Ms. Noyes was asking about and what she was questioning was other organizations were getting an additional 10%. So if you got 15%, that's where the intimate knowledge came in, and they were saying, well, we know, or they weren't being told what the criteria was to get the extra 10% and why one organization was getting 15% and other organizations weren't. Now, I received a thing from Ms. Noyes, and I'm looking here at the point system, and there's total points, and some of the organizations that had 12 points got a 15% increase in their allocations, and some organizations that only had 1 point. Now, the chart says the less points you have, the better governance you have. And here's an organization with 12 points got 15%, and an organization with 1 point only got 5%. And that was the question she was asking. Why are you giving 15% to this organization and only 5% to that organization? And that's where the argument started. It wasn't the intimate knowledge was only for the 5%. That's my understanding, and I see Anne Marie Noyes is nodding yes, that's exactly the way it is.
So, Councillor Lubberts, you're now at 5 minutes. This is the second opportunity you've had to speak. My understanding of our rules, which we do follow, is that you're allowed to speak twice, no longer than 5 minutes. On each occasion, you're now at 5 minutes.
I have one more comment.
Go ahead.
From Councillor Nutt, and he said that when he was at the meetings, there was others that were unprofessional in their conduct, and I hope that those others come forward too, and we go through the same process of having them removed from the board as well.
If we're faced with a resolution, I'm sure that we'll have to deal with it. Any other councillors? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Mayor DeKalb. A comment was made earlier as to why we're in open session. I just wanted to get clarification from the clerk so it's in the public purview. Several emails had gone back and forth between ourselves, the clerk, the mayor's office, and one of my colleagues intimated that it was additional research they had come up with that led you to put us in open session now. Was that the reason, or did you reach out to other sources to make this determination?
Madam Clerk.
Through you, Your Worship, I did read through the Ombudsman's ruling, if you would like to call it that, or opinion rather, on a case that was similar but not identical, referring to a closed session being held for personal matters. It's sort of a common misunderstanding that personal matters means personnel matters, and that's a misconception out there. But basically, a personal matter would refer to something that's more of a personal nature about an individual, not how they're acting as their capacity in their professional position. So I, upon further reflection, considered the actions of the board member in their professional capacity and therefore doesn't fall so easily under a personal matter under the Ombudsman's opinion.
Councillor Passero, and just for further clarification, I did speak with the clerk and the town's lawyer on a number of occasions about this. And Mr. Lustig's position is that you start from the proposition that all meetings can be held in open session unless you fit squarely within one of the exemptions. And you can't be criticized of being open. We've heard a lot about openness and transparency and accountability. So that's why we're in open session. It's not a clear-cut issue, but it seems to me that that's appropriate.
Thank you, Mayor Rickup. And the crux of mine was how that determination was made, and I appreciate the clerk's explanation. If I could, I just wanted to give an anecdotal example of why you just can't always rely on a matrix for funding formulas. When the CGDC permits come before us, I think I usually battle yourself, Mayor Redekop, for who has the most conflicts. I represent four or five different boards. I volunteer for bingos. I'm quite aware of the process. One organization I volunteer for, very good with the paperwork, phenomenal. Everything's always in on time. So if we're just awarding it based on compliance, we're right up there, stellar. But we have a difficulty attracting volunteers. We can't even meet the allocation we have now. It's money that's being lost. It's being wasted. There's no sense in giving us more, even though we meet that points threshold. It's not black and white. We rely on staff to give us their best recommendations. We do it in this chamber, and the CGDC does it when they meet in committee room number one or where else it may be. You have to have a trust in staff. In the absence of trust is where a breakdown occurs. And if you go into every meeting with the notion that staff are being dishonest, and that's your starting point, you're never going to get off of that point. So you can't just leave it to black and white. There's a reason why I choose to trust staff, but I ask questions, I get the answers back, I make my determination. I don't believe that I've ever gotten an answer from staff and immediately said, I don't believe you, I'm going to check this out for myself. It hasn't happened in the 6 years I've occupied the seat. I've had no reason for that to happen. So it's hard for me to wrap my mind around an individual where their starting point is mistrust and then trying to rationalize with asking additional questions to justify their own actions. So from anecdotal point of view, I understand the process. Councillor Nutt and I have talked about it. Councillor Nutt until recently was this council's representative on the Gaming Commission. If there were other members of this body that had questions, Councillor Nutt is available. Just like if I have questions of environmental, I would approach Councillor Lubberts, Councillor Zanko for traffic coordinating. That's how the system is set up. It's not for us as individual councillors to go out on our own accord and try to pull every piece of evidence we can find to back up our own opinions. And at the end of the day, usually when you boil it down, it's an opinion. There's a process for everything, and if we don't start following the process, we're in a whole heap of trouble. Processes are in place at the CGDC. Some may not agree with those processes, but they're in place, and I believe they've been followed. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Becerro. Any other councillors? Madam Clerk, before we have the vote, would you please read what the resolution is?
Could I ask for a registered vote too, sure. Mayor Redica?
Sure.
Thank you.
Through you, Your Worship, the motion, as I understand it, moved and seconded, is that Council receives the Community Gaming Development Corporation's minutes of the April 21st, 2016 meeting and approves the request to remove Director Anne-Marie Noyes from the Community Gaming Development Corporation's Board of Directors.
That's specific reference to Resolution 21-16 of those minutes.
That is the wording from that resolution. If Council wishes, I could put that language in that motion.
I think that should be in there. Okay, Madam Clerk, if you would proceed then with the recorded vote.
The vote begins with Councillor Butler.
Yes.
Councillor Nutt.
Yes.
Councillor Lubberts.
No.
Councillor Becerro?
Yes.
Councillor Zanko?
Yes.
Mayor Redekop?
Yes.
Vote is carried.
Okay, so that takes us then to, we're dealing with, Councillor Nutt, why don't we deal with the consent agenda items as amended? So that means everything except now 9.23A and D. Dealt with G.
Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that Council approves the consent agenda items as amended.
Is that sufficient for your purposes, Madam Clerk?
Through Your Worship, just to be specific, that's save and accept items 9.2.3 A, D, and G.
G has already been dealt with.
Save and accept.
But we're on to the consent agenda now.
2.3A, 9.2.3G.
Okay.
And 9.2.3D.
Okay. Any questions or comments with respect to the consent agenda package as amended? All those in favor? None opposed, that is carried. And then, Councillor Nutt, I wonder if you could move forward with D, 9.2.3D, which is the minutes of the Heritage Standing Committee.
Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that Council approves the consent agenda item 9.2.3D.
I think it's we receive those, do we not, Madam Clerk? So it's receive.
Sorry, receive.
Councillor Becerro, did you want to speak to that?
Thank you, Mayor DeCopp. I'm doing this on behalf of Councillor McDermott, who's not here tonight, and this is the best area to bring this up as the conversation was started as a part of these minutes. But more specifically referencing the memo that we received from Mr. Hayworth regarding the gateway design on the Central Avenue Bridge. During the previous term of council, it was discussed with the Bridgeburg BIA, the notion of having a gateway feature into Bridgeburg and some symbolism on behalf of the bridge. And I don't know at what point it kind of transcended over into museum and cultural heritage. I think some things kind of blended together. Museum and cultural heritage has been working quite diligently on a plaque that will be installed. And they've been quite diligent in the wording of the plaque, the design. And at the end of the day, I think it's going to be fantastic. But in those conversations, the region had also reached out to the committee through Mr. Hayworth to ask their opinion on the design of the gateway feature itself. And it was never really intended to be a heritage feature. In all honesty, there's a lot of people that would like to forget the big, ugly green bridge. So somewhere something was lost in the communication. Where I'm going with this is we have had a lot of dialogue with the Bridgeburg BIA, and they would like the color of that gateway feature to be black, not green. Heritage is looking for it to be green because the bridge was green, Heritage, but the Bridgeburg BIA, if people have been down there of late, is going in a much different direction. And they would prefer that it be black in color, and that's Councillor McDermott's preference as well. So I'm looking for direction from yourself, your worship, or the clerk as to how we flush this out.
All right, so I'm looking at the memo from Mr. Hayworth, where he indicates that the committee, and that's the Heritage Standing Committee, has a preference for
green.
Or the trusses?
Yes.
The remnants that are going to be, yeah. So did the Heritage Committee actually deal with that?
Yes. And they have recommended green because it symbolizes the old bridge. And what Bridgeburg BIA is saying is we're kind of undergoing a renaissance. It's a new beginning. They don't really want to pay homage to the green bridge. And the gateway feature, when it was first brought up on the last term of council, that conversation started with the Bridgeburg BIA. They were the ones leading the charge for those gateway features. Somewhere in the conversation regarding the plaque, conversations were had with Museum and Cultural Heritage regarding the gateway feature as well. Those should have remained two distinct conversations. So basically what I'm getting at is Councillor McDermott and myself, I'm a member of the BIA, we would like those trusses to be black in keeping with the wishes of the business district of that area.
When's the next meeting of the Heritage Committee?
We just recently had one, but I know that Mr. Hayworth, and I think it comes through in his memo, we are looking to get something to the region expeditiously. Mr. Walsh may have comments on the timing through you, Your Worship.
Sure. Mr. Walsh?
We're getting down to brass tacks with respect to timing and completion of the bridge. So as Councillor Passero correctly points out, this decision needs to be made prior to the next Heritage meeting, which I don't believe there's one scheduled before fall.
Well, let me ask this. Why would it be up to one advisory committee to what the color of anything would be, I can't understand why council would need to be involved in this, but I certainly understand the situation with the Bridgeburg BIA. I mean, it's their gateway feature. And so perhaps, what's your timing, Mr. Walsh? How quickly does the region need to have this resolved?
The sooner that they can receive word from us, the sooner they can get on with the manufacture or the restoration of the existing structure. The bridge is supposed to be back open to traffic in July sometime, so that's only a month and a half away. 2 months.
So this was put to the Heritage Committee, and the Heritage Committee voted on it.
Put to them for comments, yes. But I agree with your perspective, Your Worship, is that, you know, we shouldn't really be entrusting one committee with these types of decisions that affect a neighborhood. The Bridgeburg BIA has also weighed in, but I think ultimately now that we have a conflicting point of view, it's up to council to kind of pick a direction.
But at this stage of the game, Mr. Walsh, how much direction has the council given to anybody with respect to this bridge, its design, or what it's going to look like, its color, the plaque? I don't think we've really given much direction at all, have we?
Your Worship, we have not given direction as far as directly from council. We have seen minutes come through from the Bridgeburg BIA dating back the last 2.5 to 3 years regarding the gateway feature. That really is where the conversation started as far as the design goes, and it was the Bridgeburg BIA's notion about the utilization of the truss features to incorporate them into those. So this kind of came out of left field for the Bridgeburg BIA that another committee of the town was making these types of decisions. Not that it's a bad decision. I recognize why they're doing it. And not to say that they were prepared to chain themselves to the bridge if it went black. They just have a choice, 50-50. They went with green.
Mr. Walsh, I interrupted, kind of got my attention diverted by asking Councillor Passero. This is a decision that's really going to be made by the region, and the region's trying to accommodate the town of Fort Erie, I presume.
No, this is I think our decision. The region has passed it to us and has said, what color do you want the heritage feature to be? If I can flip the question over to Tom, he's been involved in this project since the beginning, and he knows the direction that the environmental assessment was to lead us on. Maybe he can offer comment.
Mr. CAO.
To you, Your Worship. I was part of the EA process, and from what I recall, we circulated for comments to all stakeholders, be it the Heritage Committee, the BIA, and so forth, and they provided comment. This is a gateway feature. My personal opinion is I agree with the councillor that you are going to go with decorative black poles, I'm sure, and that to go with a black gateway feature would only make sense. But what I suggest is give us an opportunity to look at those minutes and the EA process to just see if there was any comments made or promises made during that promise and provide you with a memo regarding that, and we bring it up next week.
Well, there is no meeting next week, is there? No. No, and there's no meeting, I don't think, the week after that.
June 13th.
So, 20th. Yeah. So, the poles are going to be black. What's the understructure is?
Rusty steel.
Rusty steel, yeah.
That doesn't sound very decorative. I can do that weathered at home steel? By myself. Yeah. Then, I'm going to suggest that we deal with this under new business. I'm going to permit Councilor Passero, you to bring forth a resolution if you wish. And in view of the timing, the clerk is going to advise me that we would have to waive rules of procedure, which I think this is appropriate. So I think we'll deal with this under new business. Okay. Any other questions with respect to our receipt of the minutes of the Heritage Committee? If Councilor Lubertz?
Can we discuss this gateway feature? We're going to have the further discussion on the gateway feature under
when
new
we
business.
Get to new business.
Okay,
yep.
All right. I'll wait till then.
Okay. If there are no other questions, all those in favor of receiving the minutes of the Heritage Committee? Opposed? That's carried. Councillor Zanko, I wonder if you could move that we receive the minutes of the the minutes of the Court of Revision 9.2.3A of May the 4th, 2016.
Thank you. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Passero. The council approves the consent agenda items as recommended 9.2.3A.
Are there any questions or comments about that? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. That takes us then to item number 10, which is a report. And Councillor Zanko, you have the resolution regarding that, the CN Eco Connections program.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Passero, that Council authorizes the Mayor and Clerk to execute the agreement with Tree Canada relative to the CN Eco Connections from the Ground Up Funding Program, and further, that Council adopts the RIC-FCN guidelines for new development in proximity to the railway operations.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? Opposed? That is carried. That takes us to new business inquiries. So the first item up is the memorandum. And Madam Clerk, since that memo is here, presumably we're supposed to do something with it. And what was your intention?
Your Worship, actually, it's just there as an information piece. The staff liaison, Dave Hayworth, who wrote the memo, wanted to get that information to council, given the light, the fact that the region is looking for an answer, and they did ask the Heritage Committee for their opinion on the matter.
Okay. So we're at this issue, Councillor Pissarro. Why don't I put it back to you?
Thank you, Your Worship. So I'd like to, if appropriate at this time then, put a motion forward and looking for a seconder that the council endorse black as the color of the truss for the gateway feature for the Central Avenue Bridge.
That's seconded by Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Councillor.
Before we proceed with that, Madam Clerk, you would like us to move that we waive the rules of procedure to permit us to deal with this evening. We've now committed ourselves to do all this stuff by notices of motion. So I'd entertain a motion that we waive rules of procedure so that this resolution put forward by Councillor Pissarro can be dealt with this evening. Councillor Luberts, seconded by Councillor Zanko. Any questions or comments on that? All those in favor? That is carried. Back to you, Councillor Pissarro. Your motion is now on the floor.
I won't belabor the point. I may take some lumps as I am council's representative to Museum and Cultural Heritage, but I've heard the conversations on both sides. I see their point of view, but I also see the direction that the neighborhood is going, and I think this will better serve the neighborhood in general. I think that the goals of the Museum and Cultural Heritage Committee will be accomplished through the plaque that is also being installed. I think the color of the truss is really a non-factor at this point.
Okay. Does anyone else wish to speak to that? Councillor Luberts?
Yes. Thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Just I'm going to support Councillor Pissarro's motion, but just wanted to comment on my recollection of how the heritage features were brought forward by the region, and I think it was their consultant in the last term of council when we were discussing all of this, and the bridge was coming forward and everything, that everybody would be consulted and everybody would, they were going to try to accommodate everybody, but it's the heritage feature that they're bringing forward. And was the bridge actually a heritage site, or are we just accommodating the heritage committee?
It's old, but I don't believe it was ever designated as a heritage site.
No.
It was built in 1955, so it's not even as old as, well, it's not as
not
old as
Not
even
as old as I am.
Almost not as old as you.
Yeah.
You're a little younger. Yeah. It's 61 years old.
So, you know, we can do anything we want with it now. We can just put it out the pasture. Thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. I appreciate that.
I hadn't really thought of it in that way. But
that's why I'm over here all alone. No, but anyway, getting back to the point. So I think we've accommodated the Heritage Committee by providing them with a heritage plaque. And so now we have to move forward. And I don't know that we want to have green over here and black there. And then maybe somebody's going to want red over there and yellow up top. And you know what I mean? So I'm going to support the motion and go with the black, and hopefully the Heritage Committee understands that we did one thing for them. We gave them the heritage plaque, and now we're going to give something to the BIA in Bridgeport.
Was the trust, was that an idea of the BIA? Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, I'm going to support the motion. Thank you.
Okay. Any other councillors? And I'll call the question. All those in favor of the resolution that the trusses of the heritage feature be black? Opposed? That is carried. Councillor Pissarro, you have the next resolution under new business.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that Council accepts the resignation of Brian Peltier from the Communities in Bloom Committee, and further that Council directs staff to proceed with filling the vacancy in accordance with the provisions of the procedural bylaw.
Are there any questions or comments on that? All those in favor? Not opposed, that is carried. Are there any other items of new business or inquiries by members of Council?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. I just wanted to bring something up. We had the gentleman here with the Active Transportation Committee, and he was requesting a master plan for the Active Transportation, and maybe we would include or discuss it, at least have it as part of next year's budget. And I don't know if we make a motion to have that in there or to discuss it with staff and maybe request that it be included.
My understanding is that from what Mr. Miller said is that they're still working on that and that they intend to come forward with a requested budget. Is that what you understand, Mr. Cookett? Yeah, so that I don't think we need to do anything right now. We'll simply wait for that committee to put together their plan and their request. And it should come in well before our budget.
Okay, thank you.
Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor DeCamp. An issue that arose tonight, and I think I've mentioned it once before, is that it tends to get very dry in this room. And for our delegations who are speaking, the absence of water, I think, poses a challenge to many. We drink it all the time up here. We have that luxury. We have a sign that states no food or drink allowed in council chambers. I'm wondering, is there any way we could put a carafe of our fantastic high-quality town water at the podium with maybe a stack of disposable cups and a little wastebasket? I think it would go a long way to it's nerve-wracking enough being at that podium,
yep.
But when your mouth starts to run dry and you still have half your presentation left to go, we've seen it numerous times, so if we could just mention that for staff's consideration.
That's an excellent idea, Madam Clerk. I shouldn't see a difficulty with that. I don't know. That would be a problem?
I don't see that as a problem at all, Your Worship.
It's quite right, because I've been there, and I speak all the time, but on occasions I've been dry. I just assumed it was a strategy of Council to keep the delegation short. Thank you. Anything further, Councillor Passero, before we move? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I appreciate it. I have been asked by the Ridgeway BIA to make an inquiry, which I have, with respect to an expansion for the farmers market. And I understand that Mr. Jameson has graciously offered to allow them to expand behind his building. This is more of an FYI as it is a private kind of passageway that they don't require council's approval on this. So I just wanted to let people know that is a strong possibility.
That's the little building where the dog grooming takes place. That's his little building. Okay, thank you. Are there any other inquiries? That then takes us to motions, and Councillor Butler, you have a motion.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Luberts, whereas human trafficking is a heinous crime that has been referred to as modern-day slavery, and whereas traffickers recruit, transport, harbor, and control the girl next door for sexual exploitation or forced labor, and whereas it is one of the fastest-growing crimes that starts and stays in Canada, targeting victims, 90% of which are Canadian-born and predominantly female, averaging the age of 14, and whereas Ontario is a major hub of human trafficking in Canada, and victims are lured, manipulated, and coerced, often over the internet, from every part of Ontario, and whereas human trafficking is in our neighborhoods and our communities. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of the Town of Fort Erie supports Bill 158, Saving the Girl Next Door Act 2016, and supports Halliburton Kawartha Lakes Brock MPP, Laurie Scott's motion for a multi-jurisdictional and coordinated task force of law enforcement agencies, Crown prosecutors, judges, victim services, and frontline agencies.
Thank you. Councillor Butler, did you wish to speak to that?
Now, I think it's very important that we do our part in supporting anything that prevents this kind of thing from happening, especially in our backyard.
Thank you. Any other councillors? Councillor Nutt?
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Thank you very much, Councillor Butler, for bringing this resolution forward. I agree that being a border community, we have to be especially vigilant to human trafficking. Just with the Niagara River up and down the shoreline, as well as the Peace Bridge crossing, that anytime we suspect or see something of this nature, it should be brought immediately forward to the proper authorities. So thank you very much for bringing this to council.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Anyone else? Then I'll call the question. All those in favor of the resolution? None opposed. That is carried. Councillor Lubbers, I wonder if I could hand you the chair so that I can deal with the next resolution, which is mine. Next motion.
Thank you very much, Mayor Redekop, but I was going to comment on the resolution. So,
the one that I've got?
Yes.
Not on the floor yet, and as soon as it gets on the floor, it's going to be, I'm going to ask that it be postponed in view of a conversation that I've had with the developer, and I can explain that when I get there. But the clerk advises me that if, according now to our revised rules of procedure, if I don't put this on the floor,
okay,
she takes it off the agenda. And I don't
okay.
want her to
thank
do
you
that.
Very much. I'll accept the chair as acting mayor, and we have a motion from Mayor Redekop. Removing a condition of the River Lee Estate plan of condominium.
What if I put it on the floor?
And we'll put that on the floor.
Okay. So I move, seconded by Councillor Nutt, the council amends condition 23 of the River Lee Estate's draft plan of condominium granted to Ralph and Anna Pillar on April 10th, 2014 to require that Ralph and Anna Pillar and or the future condominium corporation provide a transfer in registrable form to the town of Fort Erie for the road widening as requested by the Niagara Parks Commission to be held in escrow pending an order in council permitting the Niagara Parks Commission to accept the transfer and creation of the condominium corporation. May I speak to that?
Yes.
I'm going to ask that it be postponed. I've had conversation with Mr. Pillar, who advises me that he has recently had contact directly from the Ministry of Transportation, Minister of Recreation, Tourism, or whatever it's called, advising him that they are going to try to move this forward as quickly as possible. You've all received an email letter from Janice Thompson, the chair of the Niagara Parks Commission. She's also very familiar with what's happening. She was in Toronto last week, met with the new deputy minister of the Ministry of Tourism. So they believe that things are going to move forward. And I indicated to Mr. Pillar that I would ask that this be postponed to the June 20th council meeting, and he's quite content with that. So I would ask for your support to do that.
So the motion to postpone the motion is on the floor. There's no debate. So
seconder.
A seconder? Yeah, Councillor Butler. And so that is on the floor. There's no debate on postponement, so I'll call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? That's carried. I'll turn the chair back over to Mayor Redekop.
Thank you, Councillor Lubbers. Well, that then takes us to notices of motion. Are there any notices that anyone wishes to give this evening? Then we'll go to consideration of bylaws. And Councillor, is there anyone that wants anything removed from the package? Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I'd like bylaw 67-2015 to be removed and dealt with separately.
Okay. So the Councillor Lubbers, you have the council package. This will be for first and second reading, which doesn't include 67. Are there any other bylaws that anyone wishes removed from the package? Please proceed then with your resolution number six.
Six, yes. Thank you very much. Moved by myself and seconded by Councillor Butler that bylaw package containing bylaw number 60-2016 to exempt certain lots in plan 59M-419 from part lot control, Meadowwood Street, Spears Road Estate Subdivision, Ashton Homes, Western Limited, bylaw number 61-2016 to exempt certain lots in plan 59M-2008 from part lot control, 8, 12, 16, and 20, Mariners Lane, Crystal Beach Tennis and Yacht Club subdivision, Pym and Cooper Custom Homes, Inc. Bylaw number 62-2016 to adopt the corporation of the Town of Fort Erie health and safety policy and to repeal bylaw number 132-2015 and bylaw number 63-2016 to amend bylaw number 217-05 as amended, business licensing bylaw schedule 6, hawkers and peddlers, is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? None opposed, that is carried. That bylaw package is on the floor for questions or comments. There are none, then Councillor Passero, I would ask you to proceed with the next resolution, but the bylaw 67 for the time being.
Thank you, Mayor Redekamp. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that bylaw 60-2016, 61-2016, 62-2016, and 63-2016 are given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? Opposed, that is carried. Councillor Passero, perhaps you could read then for third and final reading bylaw number 67.
Yes, Mayor Redekop. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that bylaw 67-2015 to provide for drainage works in the town of Fort Erie, known as the Black Creek Drainage Works 2014, is given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
Thank you. Questions or comments, Councillor Matt?
Thank you, Your Worship. After reading the report, I do see that concessions were made through the whole process and that the engineer did modify certain portions. The one portion that I have the biggest bone of contention with is that when we're doing new subdivisions and developments, we handle the new drainage works at that point. I see that the new drainage work portion of the factor on cost is still incorporated in the report, so I'm not going to support this the way it stands, and it's just very confusing for the constituents because new drainage works are usually covered under subdivision plans, and here we are with a report that would allow staff to assess a cost for new drainage works. So I think it has to be one or the other. It can't be in two places, and that's for my hesitation for why I'm voting against this. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Mr. Walsh, do you have any comment with respect to that, Mr. Walsh?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I believe when they're referring to new drainage works, it's an assessment based on the contributory land area, and this is the appropriate forum and function to include those drainage works. The owner of the existing or the existing owner of the lands will be assessed pro rata based on the cost of the report and any future maintenance and construction. And going forward into development, the landowners again would be rated pro rata.
Our understanding is that if the so there's two issues here. One is the drainage within the subdivision itself, which we dealt with by the subdivision developer. Second aspect is I'm just trying to get my handle on this. The second is where that water goes, which would be into larger drainage.
Exactly. If I may offer one more comment,
sure.
I believe Councillor Nutt is referring to, and please correct me if I'm wrong, when the subdivision is developed, there's a provision in the requirements that post-development flows are not greater than pre-development flows. So that means the developer of the lands has to build stormwater controls specific to that subdivision, and then further that the water that goes out of that stormwater management facility, as you correctly say, goes into the larger drain. So yes, there is a subdivision function in there, but they're still within the watershed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Walsh. I don't know if that helps or if I'm still missing the point. Done my job. Does anyone else have any questions, Councillor Lubberts, or comments with respect to this bylaw?
Yes, I guess my question would be to the CAO or Mr. Walsh. If we don't approve this drainage works, does it default to, where does it default back to? Because it has to be dealt with one way or another. And I think this report was an update of an old report. So does it fall back to the old report?
For you, Mr. Mayor, yes. The division of costs would fall to the existing report, which are not accurate, and we would be subject to an appeal of any assessments, in which case we would be right back to where we are at this point right now.
So for clarity, this is the report that establishes the assessments.
That's correct.
Updated, but there's been no drainage work identified yet.
That's correct. The only costs involved in this report is the updating of the assessment schedule itself.
But at some point when drainage work is done, this will be how the costs will be apportioned.
That's correct.
Please, yes.
Mr. Walsh, maybe you can answer a question through you, Your Worship, to Mr. Walsh. If it's not new drainage works, and we approve this tonight, under the new assessment schedule, will they only be assessed the 30% cost factor associated with maintenance, or will they still bear the baked-in 70% for new drainage works, even though there's no new drainage work going in?
They won't be charged for drainage work if it's not done.
No, I understand that. But the way the cost factor reads in the report is that the factoring of what their allocation is based 70% on new drainage works and 30% on existing. So if we're only maintaining existing works, are they only going to be assessed the 30% of the cost? Or, because how I read the report, and correct me if I'm wrong, I read that the 100% cost assessment to each landowner, 70% of that represents a cost associated for new drainage works and 30% for maintenance works.
Mr. Walsh?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the only costs that will be assessed right now are the actual costs to produce the report, period.
Councillor Nutt?
Okay, just to follow up. So 2 years from now, big tree falls in Black Creek, we got to dredge it out. Yeah, that's maintenance work. Are they going to be assessed the full? So in the report, it reads 70% is to be allocated to new, 30% for maintenance. Are they only going to bear the cost of that 30% of the maintenance work, or are they going to have to pay the 100% cost allocation, which has a baked-in factor of 70% for new drainage works?
Mr. Walsh?
They would only be charged for the maintenance.
Then I will not oppose this.
Well, okay, now that this is completely obfuscated, Mr. Walsh, just so that I've got this correct, tree falls on Black Creek needs to be removed. That's maintenance work. So far, I'm on board. The cost of removing that tree is $100. That $100 is going to be paid by somebody. Actually, some persons. Who? All the individuals who are assessed?
That's correct.
And they'll be combined, they'll be paying 100% of that cost.
That's correct.
I don't know where the 30% and the 70% comes from, but it seems to me that whether it's maintenance work or drainage work, I think over the long haul, it's anticipated that 30% of the cost will be maintenance. But at some point, there's going to be some drainage work that's going to be more than maintenance. Is that the 30-70?
That's the 30-70. And I've confirmed with Mr. Walsh that there's nothing on the books to happen, new drainage works in the next, he said, 20 years. So I just want to make sure that the cost factor is fair to my constituents. That's really my bone of contention. And if what you're saying is true, they'll only be assessed when there's actual work done, right. Then on the new assessment schedule, I'm okay. With your explanation tonight clarifies it, clarifies the muddy creek for me. Thank you.
Thanks for that marvelous clarification, Mr. Walsh. Okay. Councillor Passero.
If a tree falls in Ward 6, does anybody hear it anyways?
Well, we've all heard it tonight. Okay. I'm going to call the question then. All those in favor then of the third and final reading for Bylaw 67? None opposed? That is carried. Well, that was easy. Okay, that takes us then to first and second reading of the ratification bylaw. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Passero, that bylaw number 64-2014 to confirm the actions of Council at its meeting held on May 24, 2016 is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Councillor Butler, you have this next resolution.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Lubert, that bylaw number 64-2016 is given third and final reading to be signed by the Mayor and Clerk under the corporate seal.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Scheduling of meetings. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you. We have a transit focus group meeting here on June 1st, conference room 1 from 5:30 to 7:30. There's also an infrastructure subcommittee meeting June 7th at 5 p.m. here at Town Hall in conference room 3. And there is a drinking water quality management system meeting June 8th at 5 p.m. Here at the Town Hall in conference room 1.
Sorry, that was June the
8th.
Time again, sorry?
5 p.m.
Okay. Any other meetings? Zero.
Thank you, Mayor DeCamp. Just a very quick announcement. I'm excited to say the Kinsman Pool will once again be reopening this year. We're down there working hard as of the long weekend to get it reopened. And this Saturday, May 28th at Centennial Library is our first of two swimming lesson sign-up days from 12 to 3. And we'll be doing a second one on June 25th from 2 to 6 right at the Kinsman Pool with a public swim and a barbecue. Lessons starting on July 2nd. And public swimming starting somewhere around the 25th as soon as the weather gets warm enough. So thank you to everybody who's come forward so far with their participation. The community is looking to rally or has already seemed to rally around it once again. So thank
Excellent.
You.
That's good news. And it is getting hotter, so that's timely. Any other councillors? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. On Wednesday, June the 1st, we have a Ridgeway Business Improvement Area meeting at the Legion in Ridgeway. At 5:15. Actually, no, that's been changed now. I'm sorry. It has been changed to 7 o'clock in the evening.
Any other meetings? Then, Councillor Nutt, I'm going to move to you, thankfully.
Thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that Council adjourns at 9:56 p.m. to reconvene into a regular meeting of Council on June 20th, 2016.
All those in favor? None opposed. That is carried. Thank you.